howdy, everybody.
Hi.
And welcome to the April 8th edition of Dead Pit Radio. I'm Creepy Kentuckian.
I'm Uncle Bill.
How's everybody doing?
I'm good. Did you have a good April Fool's Day?
I did. A lot of people were really worried about you, Uncle Bill.
I know. Thought I got murdered by a fucking yoga posing shithead.
I proved in that one YouTube video I can out-act anybody in Kentucky.
That's true. You are the best independent actor living in Kentucky today.
That's right.
Just look at that video and you'll see
it. I know. You can see it on there. It's called Some Sad News.
That was pretty awesome. I really did, like, think it was a good performance based on, like, people were, like, really scared something would happen. Oh, no.
That's right. But anyway, nobody knows what we're doing for this show. This is a mystery.
We don't even know until...
We don't really.
A day before.
Because we, like, last week there was a lot of stuff going on, you know, the Horror Hound and then WrestleMania the next weekend and all that. So we didn't really have time to really come up with anything worthwhile. So what we're going to do is a year in review this week.
Ooh. Tell them what year it is, though.
We're going to talk about the classic year, another one from the 80s, 1987.
That's right. The year of, for some reason, kids and horror films.
Yeah, when the fine young cannibals were topping the charts.
Yeah. Back in the days of that freaking lycra pants and all the really bright fluorescent colors and stuff that was starting to come in there.
Yeah, the year of WrestleMania 3.
Ooh.
Was a lot.
That 87?
Yeah.
Damn, I didn't know that was that late in like the 80s.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I always thought that was like in the mid, like 85.
Oh, that was Herbisphere.
Shit.
So, in the next segment, we're going to be talking about some of the films that came out and a lot of the movies we haven't really talked about before, so people will probably be interested in that. So, we also have some announcements to talk about. Dead Pit on the Road Season 3 is going to be coming out next week, Uncle Bill. People can order it online. It's going to be huge.
Yeah, we held out for as long as we could.
Yeah.
On Sounded Online, though. Yeah, if you...
Ooh.
If you don't realize it, though, Dead Pit on the Road Season 3 is awesome and packed full of extras that you can only find on that one DVD.
It is true. It's two discs of unadulterated fury.
Oh. Unfortunately, there was one episode that couldn't be put on there because a bunch of pillbillies have the camera that it was taken on.
That's true. But we do have, like, I don't know, like 10 or 11 reviews on there, so check it out. Mm-hmm. Go buy it now. Well, next week. So we got a lot of other stuff to talk about. We're actually reviewing a couple of Blu-ray discs.
Woo! That's right. And, actually a pretty good set of Blu-ray discs as well.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about, first off, the newest from Lionsgate with the Scream 4 and the Scream franchise being restarted here coming up probably about, what, a week?
Yeah, next weekend will be the...
Lionsgate has decided to drop all of the Scream movies on newly transferred Blu-rays for the very first time. So we're going to be reviewing the first one, the original Scream.
That's right. And also, much anticipated, is actually on our Blu-ray episode from a couple of months back, is the Blu-ray of Rob Reiner's classic film from 1986, Stand By Me.
Yeah,
so we got that stuff to talk about. We got horror news as well, so we might as well dig right in. What you got up over there first, Uncle Bill?
I guess we could talk about Piranha 3DD. So here we go. First details of the story that will revolve around Piranha making their way into swimming pools, pipes, and plumbing at a newly opened water park named Wilderness Waters.
Oh.
So, just when you thought that the plot couldn't get any thinner, it does.
I think, who is it, John Gugger that's doing that?
Yeah, yeah. The guy that directed all the Feast movies, for those out there that aren't familiar with him.
So, that one will be a direct DVD release.
Probably. Sure. And the thing about it is, too, is I like him, but the style that he makes movies in is really hard to follow sometimes. Like, it's real frenetic, and you can't really make heads or tails out of what's going on. I'm sure it'll be the same way with Piranha.
Yeah. So, we'll just have to wait and see. I mean... I don't know for a fact, but I'm guessing that that'll be a direct-to-DVD.
I love the first Feast, but I thought the last two got really kind of Yeah, too over the top.
I think
stupid.
The Feast movies was, I don't know if they were ever planned to be sequels. So no. He just sort of did that because the first one was such a big hit. Another one for Euro horror fans to watch out for. Blue Underground is releasing the classic Giallo Torso on Blu-ray and DVD July 26. Sergio Martino's film will be uncensored and arrive with various special features, including a new interview with Martino. So
yeah.
Watch out for that on July 26.
Yeah, you want to watch Torso? That sounds like a mess. What's Torso with me? Oh, God. Are you serious? This is the name of this. Dark Shadows, Let Me In. Oh, I'm sorry. This is news on the Dark Shadows movie, okay? And this is from a woman that was actually in Let Me In.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Star Chloe Moretz is in talks to join Tim Burton's film adaptation. From Warner Brothers Pictures, Moretz will play Carolyn, the daughter of reclusive Collins matriarch Elizabeth Collins.
Oh,
my God. Who's going to be played by Michelle Pfeiffer. Ooh, daddy.
That's pretty cool.
And you know that this is the one where supposedly Johnny Depp's going to be Barnabas Collins, but that's not
confirmed.
We'll just have
to wait and see. Yeah. That project's been talked about for years. Like, I don't know what the, you know, timeline is when they're going to get this, at least start filming this shit, because we've been talking about it for at least 2 years.
I just want to know that I'm kind of getting a little sick of Johnny Depp being in Tim Burton's movies. Like, does he have to be in every fucking movie that guy makes? They have some sort of contract where,
yeah,
like he has to star in those movies.
He does.
Because if you really look at it, like the best movies Tim Burton ever made, in my opinion, didn't have Johnny Depp in them. Like Pee Wee and Batman and
Big Fish.
Big Fish is pretty good too.
One other thing here, and then we'll go to a break. Talk about the Suspiria remake, which is something that we haven't heard about in quite some time. It says, since a new David Gordon Green film is on the press circuit, Your Highness, which looks fucking horrible, by the way. I think that opens this weekend. The one with fucking Keira Knightley.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking stupid. A lot of attention is being brought to the director's forthcoming remake of Dario Argento's classic. Just the other day, Green told another outlet that he's hoping Suspiria will be next on his plate. In an interview with MovieLine, he revealed a bit more regarding the film's beloved score by Goblin. He says that we got the rights to the Goblin score, so we're going to use that. Steve Jablonski, who did the score for Your Highness, is incredible. So I'd love to see what he could do with the Goblin music. We could start in a very faithful synthesizer kind of world of music that Goblin does in the original film, and by the end turn that score into a huge opera, which would be incredible.
Woo.
So
is he saying that he's going to use the same music then?
Yeah, but he's going to get his buddy Steve Jablonski to.
Oh, he's gonna fuck it up. That'll be good.
Yeah, he's gonna add some electric guitars and stuff.
He's gonna add some xylophones or something into it. Yeah. Well, I guess that's a good thing though. You don't want to completely redo the music or anything. That's a pretty classic score. It doesn't need to be messed with that much.
That's true. We'll just have to wait and see with Suspiria. Like, I mean, a lot of these, like, I just don't get it because, you know, if they're gonna give it a big budget adaptation, like, who in the fuck even knows what Suspiria is over here? Nobody really. I mean, probably less than like 2% of the movie going public knows.
Yeah.
So at this point, why don't you just try to make your own stuff?
I don't know. I think it's just easier to do that and then cash in. If it's a good idea, maybe it'll catch on, they can cash in on it. But the thing with that is good luck remaking that movie and having it be even like coherent. There's like only one person that could ever make that movie, and he already made it.
Yeah, and I don't even know if he could make it again if he wanted
no.
to. It's just one of those time capsule things. But we're going to take a break, and we'll be back. We actually have some more news topics to get to, and next segment after this one, 1987, The World of Horror.
Oh my God!
It was much different then, Uncle Bill.
Things were much better. I'd like to go back there.
I'd like to go back there only for a day. Actually, for a lot longer than a day. Actually, like how the women, like, fixed their hair and shit back then. Poofy.
Teased it up.
Yeah, poofy shit.
Yeah. They had, like, all of them had, like, a curly look to it. It was all poofed up and shit.
Yeah, I dug that shit. But we'll be back after this break here on DeadPit.com.
It's retro.
You know what, Uncle Bill?
Shut your fucking mouth right now.
No. I want to talk about Fast Custom Shirts.
Holy shit. Well, let's talk about it.
FastCustomShirts.com provides some of the best horror t-shirts I have ever fucking seen.
I don't think that you can really fully appreciate how awesome the t-shirts are over at FastCustomShirts.com until you go over to FastCustomShirts.com and look for yourself.
Yeah. The Hitman T-Shirt Joe. The highest quality of shirts that I've actually designed some of them, Uncle Bill. He actually lets the fans design some of the shirts for his site. Who else does that? Who else?
Nobody I know of. But when he's not busy playing with Carmen Opsie, he's busy cranking out some of the most high quality fucking shirts that you're going to find this side of any other damn whore t-shirt maker.
Yeah. So check him out. FastCustomShirts.com. The best there is.
The best there was.
And the best there ever will be.
It's a boot respect. Welcome back to Harold.
AKA Deadpit.
It's just us, yeah. So, we're back on here. We're going to talk about some more news. You want to talk about...
Hey, I was just thinking, where the fuck's Jess at?
Oh, she's busy right now. She's selling marijuana to school children. It's her off job. Let's talk about the Child's Play remake.
Okay.
Because we got to talk about at least two remakes. We're mandated to do that by the Board of Horology.
That is true.
After 4 years in development hell, the proposed reboot of the franchise of Child's Play is back.
It's back.
The first film in the series belongs to MGM, while the subsequent sequels are owned by Universal. So if the project goes forward, a deal for the rights would have to be sorted out. That's great. MGM is apparently taking control and production is kicking off later this year, with Brad Dourif expected to return as the voice of Chucky in the film, which will avoid the comedic tone of the sequels and intends to be a very dark film, even darker than the original, and it would seem with some notable twists of previously well-known sequences. Oh my god, it's going to be darker than fuck with a little doll in it. Look here, be scared.
God, do kids even play with dolls anymore though?
No, and furthermore, how do you go from like shit like Hostel into a doll that's supposed to be scary?
I don't know.
Look here. Fucking G.I. Joe's gonna kill you.
This doll's gonna be brutal.
Little John Cena figure come to life. Oh, you can't see me. I'm gonna kill you.
My time is right now. last bit of news is actually pretty cool. Echo Bridge Home Entertainment. We were talking about their deal with Dimension Films to get the company's library out on DVD and Blu-ray disc. They actually have a lot of stuff already out, like that we were seeing in Walmart, like 2-packs and stuff like this. So some of this stuff, you may be able to actually find it out now at Kmart and Walmart and stuff like that. But the official release dates, first up on May the 10th, Children of the Corn 3, Urban Harvest, Dracula 2000, Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers, and Hellraiser Bloodline. And on May the 15th, you got double features of Children of the Corn 5, Fields of Terror, and Children of the Corn
Shit,
6, yeah. Isaac's Return, From Dusk Till Dawn and From Dusk Till Dawn 2, Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers, and Halloween H2O, Hellraiser Bloodline, and Hellraiser Inferno.
Woo! I'm actually really excited about these titles, and I probably shouldn't be.
No, I mean, that's the thing. Like, Echo Bridge are not really known for, like, you know, awesome transfers on their Blu-rays. But at the same time, like, we're going to get all these for free. And
well, yeah, and we'll probably have some sort of contest with these, too, from what I understand. So, bow down.
Bow down to the thick neff.
But that being said, though, that was the last, like, news story that we got. So, let's talk about one contest that we do have coming up. We need to reference, because our good buddies at Blue Underground actually sent us three copies of the DVD, the special edition, the new special edition DVD of Inferno. So all you have to do to win is send a picture to the Dead Pit Gmail of you reenacting your favorite kill scene in any Argento movie. How about that?
There you go. That's actually been more creative than usual.
Yeah.
So, yeah, show us your Argento, like, I don't know, an homage to a scene. Be creative with it. That's all we ask.
I guess, like, whoever we get the first pictures from, that's who we'll send the DVDs to.
Yeah, so send them quick. But just be creative.
Yeah.
We want you to be creative because we might actually post these somewhere.
Yeah, you never know.
So, yeah, that contest probably lasts for about a month.
Yeah, we'll so, all, big thanks to Blue Underground, though, for giving us the giveaway copies. And big thanks to Argento for making some killer fucking movies that you're going to enjoy.
Yeah, actually, Inferno, they have it out here in the U.S. on Blu-ray and DVD. And Arrow Video has, they've had theirs out for a while. And you got to respect the Arrow Video version, too, because they have a bare woman's ass on that cover.
They don't fuck around in Britain. That's true. All right, mate.
So, what Blu-rays and DVDs that we have coming out?
Well, let's see here what we got that on. DVD and Blu-ray for April the 12th, if you will. We got Children of the Corn 2, The Final Sacrifice. I guess that's the Blu-ray, because I know for a fact that DVD's
already
out.
I think the DVD, that's the DVD. Here's the thing. The official release dates never go with, like, they always come out early for some reason, but that's
been out for Walmart
thing.
About 2 weeks now.
Well, there's a two-pack that's out, though. Yeah. It's Children of Corn 2 and 3, isn't it?
Yeah. So this is
the single version.
Wow.
What the
fuck? You got to have the single version of that fucking movie.
Well, that'd be the one I would get if I saw it for $5 for sure, because that's the only Children of the Corn movie I don't have.
Okay, so you got Children of the Corn triple feature with Children of the Corn 2, Children of the Corn 3, and Children of the Corn 4.
See,
why that is?
That's ridiculous. Like, whatever. I'm not even gonna fucking. Who cares?
You got the Hellraiser triple feature, which is Hellraiser 3, 4, and 5. And then you got The Inheritance. I've never even heard of it. It's on Blu-ray.
It's some independent joint.
It's on Blu-ray disc. And that's your DVD and Blu-rays for April the 12th, though.
As far as conventions and screenings, like, I don't have any. So I think Arthur the Remake's coming out. Go see that.
Please don't. I'm begging you not to.
So what we're going to do right now is take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the year that was 1987. Woo. We haven't done one of these in a long time, and it's a shame that Jess isn't here. She could give us more feedback on these movies.
She could. That is a damn shame, but she's not, so we have to trudge on like we used to for the last 4 years.
Let's do it.
So we'll be back here on deadpit.com.
Come enter if you dare. Because all the famous monsters, mutants, and madmen have a new home. Yours. Monsters HD, the first and only all-horror movie channel. Uncut. Uninterrupted. And in high definition. All day, all nightmare, and for even more ferocious thrills, go to MonstersTV.com. See fangs, claws, and chainsaws sharper than ever. Monsters HD. It's alive.
This is Lisa Wilcox from Nightmare on Elm Street 4 and 5. I play part of Alice, and I'm talking to you from Dead Pit Radio.
Welcome back to DeadPit.com.
So we're taking you back.
Golly, we're talking about horror.
We're going back into the future, back to a time when things were much more simple, when skateboarding was still relatively new concept. And people, they just had things a lot more figured out back then in that day. Ronald Reagan was still president. WWF was still mildly entertaining. It was a different time.
NWA/WCW still in business.
Right. What else was going on? Slap bands.
Rock music was still around.
Yeah. That was like, was a little pop rocks were killer.
I liked 1987.
So, we're going through the horror films that made up the year of 1987. There's some interesting titles on this list. I was just looking at it. I had no idea some of this stuff actually came out this year. But you talk about a friggin' eclectic year for titles.
Yeah, and like all these were theatrical movies pretty much, too. I mean, there might be a couple in here that didn't make theaters in the U.S.
Yeah.
But, I mean, fuck, just look at the vast amount of the stuff that came out compared to now.
Yeah, yeah, I know. So I guess we can just go ahead and start referencing some of these movies and start talking about our thoughts on them. Very first one, though, is it's so amazing to me that he even made this movie. But in 1987, I'm guessing Peter Jackson, who wrote and directed this movie, and I'm pretty sure financed most of all of it by himself, Bad Taste.
Yeah, I mean, Bad Taste is one of those movies like, now, like, you can clearly tell it was a really low-budget thing. It was something that he was doing sort of as a vehicle to get his name out there that, hey, I'm making these movies in fucking New Zealand. And it's weird because a lot of the people that worked with him on that movie are still working with him today on these big mainstream movies that he's doing. And
yeah,
that's just amazing if you go back and look at how shitty and cheap Bad Taste was.
Well, I mean, honestly, I think that Bad Taste and Dead Alive, the two movies that he made before he became, quote, famous, you know, were the best things that he ever made. In my honest opinion, like, of all the stuff that I've ever seen, there's something about those two movies that were, even though they were cheap, and even though they looked like they were shot on shit, like, they had a certain amount of charm to them, and he was really one of the most creative independent filmmakers that I've ever seen, including like Sam Raimi and people like that. I mean, he was balls to the wall in making those type of movies.
Yeah. I mean, I really love Dead Alive. Bad Taste, I mean, it had its moments, but it was just, in a lot of scenes, it was just too goddamn cheap to even watch, like, to me. I mean, it just looked so generic and like low budget and stuff. But I mean, the thing about Bad Taste that you gotta respect is, like, it was truly a low-budget film. They were doing this, a bunch of friends, basically. Peter Jackson starred in the movie.
Yeah, he was Derek, I believe it was.
And to see that he is what he came from, I mean, you gotta, I don't know if anybody else is really, maybe Sam Raimi is like the only other one that I can think of that started much like fucking people like the Polonia brothers and stuff doing that sort of thing. I mean, maybe not that low budget, but pretty damn, you know, low budget to doing fucking, I don't know how big the Lord of the Rings movie, like expensive those are.
Yeah,
I don't know if anybody
that expensive movies ever made. Huh?
I don't know of anybody besides those two that have done that. I mean, that's just pretty impressive if you ask me.
And Bad Taste was, it was a basic story about a group of aliens that come down and invade, and there was a squad that was sent to fight them. And the thing about that movie was it had his signature at that time, especially in those two movies, was just to have these sickest, like, gross-out moments in the films that were kind of like black comedies in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, there wasn't really meant to be scary. They're meant to be like Sam Raimi's movies, I guess, after the first Evil Dead. And he really was one of the few people that ever was able to pull that off where it never really, it was all entertaining. It never got too fucking stupid or anything like that. It just was, it was silly to the point.
Yeah,
really
it seemed like, too, like, these movies, there were not a whole lot of the horror movies that were like this, the Peter Jackson ones in that, like, I don't know if it's the music or just the pacing of the movie. Like, a lot of the movies seemed like a drama, too, like with the acting and the, just the music in it. It didn't, I don't know.
Well,
it was definitely different than the stuff that was going on in the United States at the time.
Bad. I mean, those two movies are, the thing I liked about him at that time is those movies were completely hyper kinetic movies. Like they went at a pace where they really didn't slow down at all. They just, no. It was just like, same way with Sam Raimi. I mean, it just, the early stuff that he made never gave you any chance to breathe, which is fun when you watch it back now.
Yeah, but I mean, after Bad Taste, he would like, it just seemed like a lot of these movies, like I know he got a lot of, critical success with, what was the movie with Kate? Winslet.
I was trying to think of Heavenly Creatures
or something like that. And then that sort of led to a lot of the big things that he's doing now. Which, you know, I mean, a lot of people don't like that stuff and a lot of people do like it, of course. But, it's definitely, I think you gotta definitely respect the guy from, I mean, it's just amazing. If you, like a lot of the people out there probably haven't seen Bad Taste. If you, it is seriously one of the lower budget movies, like probably not as low budget as Cannibal Camp Out or any of that stuff, but it's pretty damn close.
Yeah, it's amazing that he was able to do with it what he did, but.
Yeah. So, let's move on to a movie that I don't know if we've ever talked about on here, and I think you've seen this, but I don't know. The adaptation of the V.C. Andrews, novel, Flowers in the Attic, which
came out. I have seen it, yeah, and it's been a long time since I've seen it, but I actually really liked that movie when I was a kid for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah, that was one of those movies, Flowers in the Attic, that, we always used to go, my parents, and me and my mom would actually go and stay at my aunt's house when I was around that age, and we'd rent a movie every week. And that was one of those movies that really stuck with me that we watched around that time. There were a couple of other horror-style movies that did that because Louise Fletcher's fucking character in that, she's always playing like a evil, you know,
right.
Cunt.
You might remember for Nurse Ratched in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
To me, I mean, I love One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, but her role in this movie... She plays the most evil bitch that I've ever seen.
Well, it's funny because in this movie, she's really evil to kids.
Yeah.
That's the key difference. Like, she keeps them locked in the attic and inside this house and stuff, too. And it's like they never really get a chance to go out and have any type of life or anything like that. And she's always fucking abusing them. And doesn't she try to poison them or something like that?
Yeah,
like,
I mean, they're... she gives them these cookies every day and sprinkles the poison actually on the cookies.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like the basic story is the mother who was, trying to reconcile with her parents after her husband dies, goes back to live in the mansion. Like her parents were like millionaires or something. And she left, ran off to get married at a young age and had kids and stuff like that. And her kids never knew her grandparents and all this, but they go there to live because they have nowhere to go. Her husband died. And as soon as they go there, the grandchildren are, there's like four of them, I think, are forced to stay in this attic, you know. Actually, this room that leads to the attic, I think, is what it is. And are never let out. They're never allowed to go outside or... I don't know, there was some sort of subplot to where the father didn't want to know that they existed or something because he was getting ready to die and she wanted to get the inheritance or something like that. So, but slowly, like, the grandmother just starts to, you know, malnourish them and poison I think it's cookies or donuts or something, sprinkles the poison and shit on there. And they can never, they don't have a way to escape. They try to escape and Louise Fletcher's character just fucking, like, beats the shit out of him or something.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know, man. I always thought that was a pretty fucked up movie, especially for that time period. You just didn't see stuff like that.
Yeah, it was. And I remember, you know, bits and pieces of it. I don't remember it very well. But I think, wasn't Christy Swanson one of the kids?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember even like, when I was a kid watching it and thinking that she was one of the, I mean... Louise Fletcher was one of the evilest fucking bitches in that movie. Like, you just wanted her to get what was coming to her. But it's a good movie, though. Definitely recommend it.
Yeah, nobody really talks about it either.
It's based on a V.C. Andrews book, too.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, God, we've seen this next one a million fucking times. It just got re-released on DVD from Lionsgate, I believe. The Gate.
That's right.
Which was one of the kids... meet horror films that came out around this time, where you basically had these two kids who were friends who unwittingly open up this gate to hell, I guess, and there's all these little demon creatures that come out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Steven Dorff is one of the kids, and I don't remember who the other one was. Just some random.
I think Lewis Tripp or something was his name, because I remember Felcher was trying to find his ass for the DVD, and they never could. Like, didn't know where he was at. This is one of those two that I watched over and over and over again when I was a kid. I don't know how many times I saw this. I just loved the hell out of this movie. This was a Canadian movie. I mean, this is one of the rare things that Canada brought to us that was actually good. Back in the day.
Yeah, and the funny thing about this movie, too, is the thing that everybody always remembers about it is the little claymation demons and stuff.
Really well done.
Yeah.
Like, for that time period.
And it's a weird, go back and watch that movie now. It's a weird, surrealistic kind of movie, too. I mean, it's kind of off-putting because it's all children in the movie for the whole time, but the way that it's filmed is almost like a dream, and there's these weird subplots about where Steven Dorff keeps thinking he's seeing his parents coming back, and they're really not, and they're like, you know, he has these flash sequences where they try to kill him, like his parents try to kill him. There's some subtle kind of stuff going on in that movie that's...
Yeah, and the thing is, too, like all of the... Like, it's a kids movie, and it's rated, like, is it PG-13 or something in it, I think.
It shouldn't be, though.
And then it has, like, nods to Satanism and... Like, the what is the band that he reads the lyrics?
I cannot remember
either.
Yeah.
But it's got a lot of really cool stuff in it, a lot of stuff that everyone talked about back in the 80s. Like, you know, you play the record backwards and it plays all this shit. And
well, that and Trick or Treat. I wonder if Trick or Treat came out in 87.
No, I think Trick or Treat was more like 85 or 86.
Yeah. But, yeah, they both had the same kind of things. Satanism when you play the records.
Yeah, but the special effects that was done were amazing in the gate for their time. I mean, all the little minions, they did those stop motion, I believe. And just great. It's a great little movie that, nobody else really talks about. And I'm hoping that Lionsgate that'll be one of those they re-release on Blu-ray. Because they've been releasing a lot of their back catalog stuff again on Blu-ray, so that would be another cool one I would like to get. And as another one, too, that really does have one problem I had with the gate is that the ending was way too sappy, and it was everything was like, they should have really hinted at the sequel at the end of the first movie, but they didn't. So that is the gate. Let's go down here and pick... Let's pick one that I've never seen all the way through, but I've tried to watch it.
Okay.
Near Dark, which a lot of people are like, when the fuck y'all ever going to talk about Near Dark? They love Near Dark.
This is one that everybody's kind of divided on, because you either really love this movie or you really think it's shit. And I guess I fall in the minority, or we fall in the minority of people that just really don't like this movie. It was directed by Catherine Bam Bam Bigelow, who was, she won an Oscar, one of the very first women to win Best Director Oscar for, was it The Hurt Locker she won it for? And I don't know what it is about this movie, though, but I could just never fucking get into it. Like, people always talk about it like it's the best, you know, modern-day vampire Western retelling movie, and I never could get into that.
I never could either. Like, I had the DVD for fucking hell and ever. I was like, oh, shit, I'm going to finally try to watch this motherfucker. And I tried to watch it. And it was almost like one of those damn David Lynch movies. Like, where you're like, okay, when is this actually going to be worth watching? You know, when's this going to turn into something worth watching? And I just never could get into it. I never could make it through it, the whole movie.
And periodically, I'll go back and try to watch the movie again, just to see if there's something on it that I'm not getting. I mean, Bill Paxton, he's got a good role in it, whatever. He plays a crazy man like he did all the time back in those days. Like, he plays the crazy kind of redneck fucking vampire in that movie. But I don't know what it is. It's just too slow, and it really doesn't have a very good payoff or something in the movie. But I did, because it was $6 on Blu-ray. I bought the fucking Blu-ray of it, so I'll go back and try to watch it again.
You didn't like it on DVD?
No.
It might be better in HD, though.
You never know. I might have missed something again.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I don't really know what to say about Near Dark. I don't really like it. I can say that.
It's, you know, it was trying to do like a modern day Western vampire film. And I guess that's why a lot of people like it, is it wasn't like the other vampire films that were coming out around that time. But I still don't think it's a very entertaining movie. I just don't.
It ain't no account.
So, okay, so you got Near Dark. Let's see. Here's one that I do think is one of the better dramatic horror films to come out around any time in the 80s, which was The Stepfather. We should definitely talk about that one. It just got recently released for the first time, actually, from...
on DVD and Blu-ray disc.
Yeah, who released it?
Shout Factory, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Terry O'Quinn, who was the stepfather in a couple of movies, and they made a third stepfather.
And some douche that...
Yeah. It's supposed to be in him with plastic surgery.
Now, really, Terry O'Quinn is the reason why I love these two movies, especially The First Stepfather, because that guy gives one of the most amazing performances as like a multiple personality case. Like he wants to be the perfect father, but he realizes he can't do it, and that drives him crazy. He realizes the family, he'll never have the family that he wants. And the family in this case is the daughter's Jill Shewellen, who's, she does the convention rounds and stuff now. She's really good
freaking
in that
smoking
movie. Yeah. And he realizes that, and it drives him insane, and that's what causes him to kill people. Like, anything that interferes with what he sees is, like, the perfect family life for himself.
Yeah.
But it really is just centers around him. Like, that movie works because
And throughout a lot of the movie, it's fine. I mean, it's just like, when the hell is this going to start? And then, when he snaps, it is kind of entertaining because, like, you're like, wow, man, he's actually acting.
Yeah.
Because he really does look like somebody that's just fucking lost it.
Yeah, and there's scenes in that movie, too. Like, the very first time you get an inkling that there's something really, really wrong with the guy is when he's showing the one guy the house, and then he goes off on him and all that stuff, and really just, like, goes... It's kind of like a...
Attacks him violently.
Yeah, it's kind of like an American Psycho type of deal with him, too, in the movie.
Well, a lot of people think that that's where they got the American Psycho story.
Probably is. It's the same type of story. But also, there's a scene in that movie I'll never forget either. And anytime a scene sticks with you like that, you know there's something that they're doing right in the movie. But it's when he's downstairs and he's pitching like a shit fit about something. I don't remember what it was. And then Jill Shewellen comes downstairs and he doesn't realize that she's watching him. So he's going off. And then when he sees her, he shifts like that back into like, oh, honey, you all right? It's like the best transition sequence, though.
Yeah, it is actually a pretty good movie. I don't even know if, like, The Stepfather is, like, I mean, I don't know if you would consider that a straight horror movie or just more along the lines of, like, a psychological just thriller or something. That might have been before psychological thrillers came out because they invented that word for Silence of the Lambs, didn't they?
I guess so, but...
But it is like...
I always thought it was a horror movie, though. I mean, I guess it's a drama, too, I guess.
Yeah. One that, like, I don't know if we could say too many good things for is the fourth and final Jaws film, at least to this day. Jaws the Revenge.
I will say that when I was a kid, I thought this movie was awesome, but that was when I was, like, 7.
You didn't know any better.
When it came out, yeah. So, going back and in hindsight, it is a horrible film, but it has, like, a certain amount of cheesiness to it that makes it very rewatchable. And of the fact that the premise is the shark is back. I think it's in fresh water this time too, which is retarded. And it's a serial killer now. Like it's hunting out members of the family. Yeah. And purposely.
It traveled all the way down to fucking Florida or something, didn't it?
I don't remember where they're at in it, but yeah, I think it might be.
Yeah. All the way from like Maine or wherever they were at to Florida. They were going on vacation. They're not safe from Jaws' kin.
And there's so many things in this movie that don't make any sense. For instance, the casting. You got Michael Caine, Mariel Van Peebles doing a Jamaican accent, Lorraine Gray, who was the one in the first film, Chief Brody's wife in the first film. She's the main player in this whole film. And there's just so much silly shit that goes on in it. Like, her kid gets killed by the shark and it bites off both his arms or something like that. Like, that shit doesn't happen. He's in a boat and it jumps up and bites off his fucking arms. He's like, oh! I ain't got no arms! I can't do nothing!
I haven't seen that movie in so long, but I do remember, yeah, it is one of those that's just so bad it's actually pretty funny. Like, at least it's that. I mean, at least it just isn't so fucking horrible it's, like, unwatchable.
There is a scene in that movie, though, that always freaked the shit out of me when I was a kid. And it's a scene where she's swimming in the swimming pool. She's having a dream that she's swimming in a swimming pool and the shark comes up. And because I watched that when I was a kid, I was scared shitless to go in, like, the deep end of the swimming pool for, like, a year.
There's a damn shark in there.
Jaws gonna get me.
Yeah. So I don't know what else you can say about Jaws 4.
It's shitty.
It is pretty bad. Yeah. Like, Michael Caine, I remember somebody asked him about that one time or something, and he said he'd never seen it, and he did a lot of movies around that time just so he could buy extra cars and stuff. So that's probably what Jaws 4 was like, his 1987 Rolls Royce.
Wow, there's some good ones here left, though, but we should probably concentrate on the list and stellar ones right now. I mean, there's some classic movies on here, so let's get to the ones that aren't so classic. And let's start with House 2, The Second Story.
Now, you asked me about the plot of House 2. I have no idea. I just remember, like, a lot of the characters in House 2.
Okay, now, if I'm not mistaken, isn't House 2 the one where it's, like, the Western guy comes back or
something
like that?
Yeah, I do remember that. I can't remember his damn name, though.
I think the plot was something about a skull. Like, there's something about they're trying to find this crystal skull.
That is Indiana Jones.
No, I mean, seriously, that's the plot of this one, too. I don't remember why they're trying to find it or what the reasoning is. I'm sure a lot of people that are, like, uber horror nerds probably know this, but there's some reason that the one guy, there's the good dead Western guy and the bad dead Western guy.
Right.
And they're both attempting to find this skull that does something. I don't remember what it does. And he's trying to prevent him from finding it. Now, why, I have no idea. But the funny thing about the movie is not necessarily the plot. It's like the fact that the guy playing the grandfather, the dead Western
cowboy,
cowboy grandfather, is hilarious. He's actually really, really good in it.
Well, that's awesome. Like, the makeup effects and stuff in that movie is awesome, too.
Yeah.
Like, the way he looked and all that. He had, like, the Hogan stash going on. And I remember that was the movie, too, with the caterpillar dog.
Yeah.
Like, I always thought that was the coolest looking fucking thing when I was a kid. I was like, I want one of them damn things.
It was, I mean, the first house was good, but the second house is completely different. Like, the second house doesn't even try to be at all scary, really. It's straight comedy.
That's another franchise that nobody talks about.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever talked about the first house one single time on here.
No, I don't think so either.
But, I mean, House
2... I do have it on DVD.
I do too. House 2 is a completely different ballgame, though. I mean, it is a good movie. Oddly, it shouldn't be. It has no reason to be. I think Jonathan Stark is in it, too. He plays, like, the guy's best friend. And I don't remember who the guy is, but he inherits this house, and then somebody's coming back for that skull, and then the guy, like, his grandfather comes back to life somehow or another shit. I don't even remember how now. But it's...
I would like to see that movie again. I haven't seen it in so long.
It is. It's really good.
I actually like both of the house movies pretty good.
Yeah.
I know there was a third one. They changed the name of it, though.
It was The Horror Show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I've never had any desire to see
Horror
that.
Horror Picture Show or something like that shit. I don't know. Okay. But that's House 2.
That's House 2. Let's go on and talk about Ghoulies 2, which was also released that year, which is an awesome movie. It's way, like, for fans of Ghoulies movies, odds are if you're a fan of the Ghoulies movies, you're a fan of the sequels, because the original movie sucked ass. Like, I remember the artwork for the first Ghoulies, and I remember, like, oh, shit, I remember those Ghoulies movies. Those Ghoulies movies kick ass, you know. And it was the sequels that I remember, mainly the, you know, Ghoulies 2, which... I think the entire movie is set around a amusement park, and basically the ghoulies are running rampant throughout the amusement park on Ghoulies 2.
Is that Ghoulies 2?
Yeah.
Is that the one with the Phil Fondacaro?
Yeah.
In it? Okay, I do remember that movie a little bit. I honestly don't remember a whole lot about it. I remember the ghoulies take over, like, in the haunted attraction in it or something like that, and the people that walk through end up getting killed by them.
Yeah. I think. And it's really more of like the Ghoulies movies at this point became more like dark comedy than anything else. Like the first movie, it was mainly like, I think the part of the first movie was this guy resurrected the Ghoulies from some satanic book or something, and he was like really serious about it and all this, and it was just
well, this was the golden age of these fucking critter movies where you had critters and Ghoulies and gremlins. All that stuff was spawned by gremlins, of course. And you had all like munchies and just all those little friggin' things that they made movies about back then, which I actually enjoyed all those movies, by the way. Like, there wasn't a single one of those movies that came out like that I didn't really enjoy. Yeah,
I was always a fan of those type of movies, and I don't see why they don't make more of them now. I mean, shit, that, like, you want to talk about movies that you don't really need a huge budget to do. The Critters movies, oh my God, all you gotta do is get like a little furry ball and throw it at motherfuckers. That's what they did.
Yeah.
That was also funny about those Critters movies. Is get on furball and throw it.
Those movies, I mean, they don't really make anything like that now at all. Like Critter movies or anything like that.
It's all like these, I don't know, like mega piranhas and shit. Now, that sort of took the place of
Sharktopus.
Yeah, Ghoulies, the Ghoulies movies, Ghoulies 2 and 3. Are the ones you need to watch.
Was Ghoulies 3, Ghoulies Go to College.
Yeah, that's right, baby. The Ghoulies Go to College.
That was the best one. Okay. We really only got, like, really good films left now.
Yeah. 87, it's hard to believe it was that good of a year, but it was. So let's go ahead and dig in.
So the other one, I don't even know where to start. All these movies are good. Let's just start with one that I'm not sure that you and I watched this, but I'm not sure how much we really remember about it now at this point, which would be Street Trash, which is recently been released again by, was it Synapse?
Street Trash.
I think Synapse released that.
Synapse released it initially. I don't think it's been released recently, though.
Well, recently. I guess I meant like 2 years, 2 or 3 years ago. It was Roy Frumkes was the guy kind of behind the thing.
He's the writer.
Yeah, which was the guy, he was actually the guy that did the Diary of the Dead thing, or what was it called? Document of the Dead. And it's like a trauma movie, is basically the best way I can describe it. These guys, they get a hold of
it. Actually like a good trauma movie, though.
Yeah, like a really good one. They get a hold of this thing called Viper, which is this liquor that makes you melt, basically.
Explode.
Yeah.
Change colors.
And people that are going around drinking it and stuff like that are changing into these toxic Avenger-like creatures. And the other only other part of it I can really remember is there's the main guy who's like runs this gang who's just one of the, you know, those horror movies had the asshole character that was an asshole for no real good reason.
Yeah, I saw the movie one time, I think, back when the DVD came out, and I remember really liking it. And I remember it being really creative. Like, the plot of the movie is hilarious because it's mainly a lot of bums that get the Viper and drink it, you know. And I thought it was an ingenious idea. And I do remember the DVD actually came with a couple labels of the, I think it was called Tenafly Viper, who's the name of the liquor. And it comes with the liquor label. So you can put it on your own, you know, some liquor bottle that you got.
Yeah.
It's pretty
and
neat.
The special effects is what I remember. I remember them being awesome, like practical.
Well, they got away with a lot too, because a lot of the stuff wasn't bloody. It was like they had like yellow blood and green blood, and you know, they were just being really creative with that. They made it really colorful so they could be as gory as possible, but with not really blood.
Yeah, so it kind of looks like a combination of RoboCop and fucking trauma movies or something in there. But yeah. It's a good movie, though. If for that type of movie, it's got to be one of the best. Those splatter kind of cheap splatter films that came out around that time.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know what kind of a wide release that thing got when it came out. Probably not that wide of a release.
Yeah.
So
what we got?
Let's pick one of my favorites that not a lot of people talk about as far as the filmography goes of Dario Argento, and that would be Opera, which is probably the movie that is closest like Suspiria than anything he ever did. It's basically Suspiria in an opera theater.
It's a weird fucking movie. I went back and watched that again recently, and it's like, good Lord, man. There's weird, like, for one thing, it's got the guy in it. I can never remember his name. He was in Copycat, too, though. Like, one of the main leads in the film.
Uh-huh.
And essentially the woman is, what is she, an opera singer?
Yeah.
And she's being chased around by this guy or this person. You don't really see who it is. And he goes around and duct tapes or chains people to things, props their eyelids open with like these little needles and on this piece of tape, and then proceeds to like do all this crazy shit in front of them and make them watch like him killing people and stuff. That's the essential plot of the Giallo killer in this one. But it's got some really bizarre violence
scenes. Yeah, I think the scene with Catriona Catone to Sonny.
Yeah, yeah.
She was a seamstress. Man, that was one of the most violent fucking scenes I think I've ever seen in an Italian movie.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, shit, it almost looked like you were watching a snuff film if it wasn't so, you know, well made.
But with an Argento film, the plot's really secondary and the visuals are first. And going back and watching Inferno, and we'll talk about this soon when we review Inferno, which will probably be really soon. You got to keep in mind that, he just did some amazing work back then. And with the exception of Inferno, which if you go back and watch the visuals in that movie, especially the first 30, 45 minutes of that movie, I don't think you could create anything like that. I don't think anybody else could create anything like that now. I mean, he was just on another level at that point.
I think this is a really underrated Argento film. It's probably my top three Dario Argento movies, I would say. Just really underrated, and a lot of the stuff, like we were saying, the violence and stuff that is in it is probably, it might be one of the most violent Argento movies. Maybe the most violent. I don't know. Suspiria is pretty violent too.
They're all pretty violent, really.
Ooh. So that was Opera from 87. Now just think about that, folks. We're about halfway in. Think all the fucking awesome movies that came out in 87.
Yeah, there's a ton more coming too, really. Oh, man. There's really nothing left but classics, though, so let's just start with this one, directed by Joel Schumacher, one of the most popular of the modern vampire films ever made, with the two Coreys. You got The Lost Boys, which came out in 87, too. You know, when you're a kid and you watch this shit, and I saw this movie when it came out on, you know, VHS, I watched that movie, I know, 10 fucking times, like right in a row, because it was just awesome. It's like a kid's movie, really, which is the weird thing. They don't make movies like this anymore where they're adult movies, but they have kids, like, completely in them throughout the whole thing. And this is a movie where you were, like, you really related to the heroes if you were a kid around that time.
He had an awesome cast in the movie, too. I mean, it wasn't... That's the thing I always remember. I mean, you had, like, Corey Haim, Corey Feldman. You had Jason Patrick, which was great. He was awesome in his role. And I haven't seen him in hardly anything lately. Kiefer Sutherland. I mean, Jamie Gertz. Just amazing. You know, even Diane Wiest and the dude that was the old vampire guy.
Yeah, I can't remember him either.
And then the fucking grandpa guy. I love that guy. Mm. He was awesome.
Well, the writing was good. The characters were good. Special effects were amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I love the visuals in it, too. Like, the Schumacher, about anything that guy does, looked great. I mean, say what you want to about the movies, but his visual style is always awesome. And just like, the movie, like, for anybody that's a fan of Lost Boys, you've got to own that on Blu-ray. Like, that movie looks unbelievable.
It looks thousand. I had the original DVD of that movie, and that DVD looks like shit anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, the first press DVD, oh my God, it's awful. It's some of the grainiest looking shit ever. And you buy the fucking Blu-ray and you're like, God, it's like watching a completely different
night
movie.
Night and day difference.
Thing about that movie too is I don't think people give a lot of credit for how good the writing was, because it tackles a ton of stuff in there, like family and fitting in and that kind of stuff, and like just
peer pressure.
Yeah, just a ton of stuff that's going on in that movie that people see it as like a modern day MTV style. That's what you always hear. It's the MTV vampire movie and all this stuff.
Well, it was back when MTV was actually fucking good, though.
Yeah, and really, though, it works because all the actors in it can pull off the story of the move, like moving to a new place and not fitting in and that kind of thing, and getting in with the wrong group of people and family problems and stuff like that. And the whole thing just works. And Kiefer Sutherland is an amazing heel, too.
Yeah, the soundtrack in that movie is great as well. I don't know if you mentioned that. I actually have the soundtrack on CD.
Yeah, the soundtrack is very modern rockish for around that time, too.
Yeah, it's an awesome movie, one of our favorites for sure. I don't know if we ever reviewed it on the show. I don't think we did.
I don't think
so. I'm pretty sure we never got it to review, so. But, yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong with Lost Boys. Who in the fuck doesn't like Lost Boys, though?
I'm sure
there's somebody, but.
Yeah, well, you know there is, but I've never known anybody that actually, like, came up and like, oh, shit, I hate Lost Boys.
The one thing I do hate about Lost Boys is all the fucking jabronis from the movie that are actually doing conventions. Nobody wants your autographs, goddammit, you little boy from Lost Boys. Nobody gives a shit.
Hello. I was a little boy that didn't say anything in Lost Boys. What was that kid's name in that? Star? No, that was Jamie Gertz.
Beanie or something like that.
I don't remember.
Jimmy?
Oh, it's just little Jimmy. He ain't gonna do nothing. He's a little boy vampire.
He's a little shit nugget.
Yeah, so another one that, like, I haven't seen this movie in so long, but I always love watching it. It's another one it's almost like, you know, Carpenter meets Argento in a lot of ways, and that would be Prince of Darkness, which would be the last time Donald Pleasence and John Carpenter worked together. And it's just an amazing, like, I think in a lot of ways, Prince of Darkness was the last John Carpenter movie of that classic style John Carpenter movies. That, like, I think it was the last time he worked with Dean Gundy and a lot of the same people that he worked with during Halloween and The Thing and The Fog and those movies like that.
Well, the concept of that movie is awesome. The idea behind it is amazing. It's got some really, really memorable scenes, but at the end of the day, it's just, in a lot of places, it's just disjointed, too. It's like they didn't have enough time to finish it, or he didn't have enough time to actually do what he wanted to do, because there's a whole lot of things in that movie that are not really explained. Maybe that was his intention, I don't know, but he's not really known for making that type of movie where you just don't know what the hell's going on in the movie. Like, there's no...
I think Alice Cooper's actually in the movie, too.
Yeah, he plays a homeless guy.
He's like an extra in it.
And there's scenes in it where you're just like, it'll scare the shit out of you. Where, like, the guy standing outside and...
I always loved the original artwork for Prince of Darkness, too, just because it was so, like, I don't know, just creepy looking. Like, do you remember the artwork for it where it's like somebody's pouring out, like, a ghost or something on it?
Yeah,
really bizarre.
Well, the basic plot of that movie, if I remember, is something where they find this... what is it, though? The James Wong guy... Or the guy that was in Big Trouble in Little China. What are they find something? Is it a book or something like that where it starts to predict the second coming?
See, that's the thing. I don't really remember. I haven't seen that movie in years. I would love to see it again. And actually, I think it's one of those that needs a re-release.
It seems to me that he's a professor, and they're studying a book that has something to do with unlocking this demonic plague, almost. And as they're studying it, all this stuff starts to come to pass, and they're all in this building, and all these bums are basically being turned into quasi-demon things in it, and they start to attack the building almost like Assault on Precinct 13 or something.
Yeah, and I remember they're all surrounded by the building, like by all these, I don't know if they're demons or what, but Alice Cooper's one of them, and they're all like circling that building.
Yeah.
There's no escape.
But they want you change.
They want you. You're a maggot.
Yeah, it's a creepy-ass movie, though. I mean, it's got a lot of...
I actually don't own that one. I would like to see it again.
It's got a lot of good atmosphere and some scenes that you probably won't ever forget.
No.
Okay, so Prince of Darkness, we did Lost Boys. There's only three left, and they're all three amazing. So let's start with Hellraiser, which came out in 87.
Hellraiser! Directed by Clive Barker.
I actually heard Clive Barker on his deathbed. I don't know if that's true or not.
I doubt it.
I know they said that he was actually dying of cancer, though, or something. I don't know if that's true.
Who knows, really?
Hellraiser is one of the more fucked up movies, I think, that came out around that time that really...
It's one of the more original movies, you gotta say that. Jesus Christ, there's never anything like that before or since.
The thing I always remember about Hellraiser, even when I was a little kid and I watched it, because I didn't really get that much of it when I was a kid, it's like just how goddamn scared I was when I saw the Frank character with, because that's just so amazing the way they did that.
Yeah.
Where he didn't have skin.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just really, really creeped out by the way that looked. I mean, that was just amazing for that era.
Yeah, I mean, well, the story is pretty basic, really. At the heart of it, you got this guy, I guess it's Frank, who finds a puzzle box, unwittingly, even unbeknownst to him, unlocks hell, brings forth these Cenobites.
That his soul appalls.
Yeah, and then, you know, there's the other plot, which is it Christy? Is that her name? In the film, that's Ashley Lawrence.
Kirsty.
And
or Kirsten.
Yeah, her family is moving to this house, and Andrew Robinson, which is the father, spills blood in this part of the floor where this resurrects this body, which is, I guess, Frank in the film.
Yeah.
Except the body has to feed off of people to regain the skin and stuff, because at first it just looks like a big blob of like muscle and tissue and stuff. And if that's not fucking weird enough, that's like the first half of the movie. Then towards the end of the movie, the Cenobites come about and take people back to hell and punish all the sinners and stuff in the film and all this. It's just, it's another movie where you're like, what the fuck is going on in this movie? It visually is an amazing film. The special effects, still to this day, the special effects hold
really
up.
Good. Yeah. I think it like around 87, 88, the special effects in those movies were so awesome. And then right after that's when they started getting into the CG and the visual effects stuff. And it just seems like they never really progressed special effects that much further in that period, which sucks.
Yeah. But Andrew Robinson, like, he made a living after Dirty Harry of playing a psycho character. And in this film, there's no exception. He basically goes nuts towards the end of the film, and it's just, he's really...
He's nuttier than squirrel
he's
shit.
Like Terry O'Quinn, the stepfather. He's kind of fun to watch when he goes off. And then, and well, of course, there's the classic Cenobites, which everybody remembers, and they've made, like, 10 fucking films about them now, so...
Yeah, the... I think that's the thing, like, that made the movie so original, too, is because, like, a lot of the killers back then were, like, you know, just, you know, Freddy, Jason. But in the Cenobites, like, the characters were just so detailed, every little, like, the pins in the head, and nobody ever seen anything like that before.
So, I don't know if he did it on, I mean, he probably did. I'm not sure if he meant for them to be as homoerotic as they are with all the leather and stuff like that that they're wearing that was really popular around that time, you know, for the, on the gay club scene and all this stuff. I'm betting he probably did do that intentionally, but, cause they're basically dressed up in S&M clothes, you know, all the Cenobites are. But if one thing Clive Barker is fucking like counterculture, un-PC guy, like the stuff that he fucking comes up with, you just know where it's coming from.
What can you say, though? There's not too many other movies that have, I mean, they're still making Hellraiser movies to this day. So, and that was the one that kick-started it off. So,
yeah.
I mean, what can you say, really?
I can say it's fucking killer.
I know you like all them sequels. I don't.
I love all the...
I guess the last one, well, there's a couple more on here. And we've talked about this movie quite a bit. Fred Dekker's The Monster Squad from 1987.
With The Monster Squad.
This was another one as a kid. I watched this movie over and over and over again. I used to rent this damn thing so much. I swear to God, I didn't know any better than I could actually copy movies. I just rented the hell out of them. And this is another one where the kids are... based throughout, I mean, this was a big theme in the 80s where kids were starring in these movies. I guess it started with, I don't know if it started with the Goonies, but maybe E.T. in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It started with E.T. and then you have the Goonies and you had Stand By Me and Monster Squad. And it was like, pretty much, I think what they were trying to do with Monster Squad, and they did, is make the Goonies, but with monsters in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was basically the movie. I mean, that the classic Universal monsters, too. You know, you had Dracula, Wolfman, the Mummy, you know, the Creature, Frankenstein.
I don't know what the world I could say about this movie that we haven't already said on here. Like, I mean, we've talked about it when the DVD came out. It was like one of the most anticipated DVDs ever.
And we actually broke the news about the DVD back in the day.
And it's just kind of sad because they don't ever make movies like this at all now. It's, you get a group of kids, you get a group of monsters, and you watch it like play out. You have some amazing kid actors in that movie, and you have some amazing designs for the monsters. I think Stan Winston did most of all the designs for.
Yeah.
And then you got Fred Decker, who was kind of at that time the king of making smart, like, kind of, I don't know how to explain it, like comedic horror films that were smart and kind of incorporated catchphrases and stuff like that into them that people related
to. I mean, he was basically making movies like, you know, Shaun of the Dead, but like 20 years before.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it.
I mean, the guy was way ahead of his time, and it's just like, if anything, I mean, I don't know if the guy's ever going to make another movie or not. I would doubt it, but, you know, at least to his movies, like, he's had somewhat of redemption, you know, from Night of the Creeps and Monster Squad, you know, over the years.
Yeah, definitely. God, there's so much classic shit that goes on in that movie, though, that you remember from when you were a kid. Like, the Wolfman has nards and fucking, you know.
Creature stole my Twinkie.
And Frankenstein, you know, the Tom Noonan Frankenstein in that movie.
Yeah, and Frankenstein was the sympathetic character and was really become part of the Monster Squad. And the scary German guy.
Yeah. It's not a deep movie by any means, but it definitely is a movie about kids that, like, band together and carry out, like, a common cause type of thing. They made those movies all the time back then, which I still enjoy all of them today.
Yeah, and the Monster Squad is one of those movies that should have been a huge hit when it came out. Like, I think it pretty much bombed in theaters.
Yeah.
It didn't do anything.
I don't think any of Decker's movies did anything, did they?
But yeah, it's definitely become one of our favorites and a lot of people's favorites. I mean, how many people out there have Monster Squad t-shirts? You go to conventions, bootleggers made fortune off of the DVDs for years. It's just a really beloved, you know, movie.
So the last one, 1987, that was on this list anyway.
Yeah, and I'm sure we probably missed a few, but fuck.
Yeah, Evil Dead 2.
That's right, Dead by Dawn,
which a lot of people consider to be the best film that Sam Raimi ever did, still to this day. And I'm not really inclined to argue with you about that. I mean, I probably like the original Evil Dead a little bit more than Evil Dead 2, but I mean, Evil Dead 2 is really where that guy hit his stride. He took the concepts from Evil Dead, had more money, and really, like, showed that he could make a film like that, but with a really good budget, and it look amazing, you know?
Yeah. I always liked Evil Dead 2. I think it was basically a remake of the first Evil Dead with a bigger budget, and he really, I think that he improved as a filmmaker, you know, technically, from the years, like, the original Evil Dead was shot in the late 70s.
Yeah.
You know, and it was almost like a 10-year gap there before. So he had actually grown quite a bit as a filmmaker. And the only thing about Evil Dead 2 that I don't like is it just seemed like, and there was comedic shit in the first Evil Dead, but it seemed like it was just everywhere with Evil Dead 2. It was maybe they sprinkled a little bit too much of the comedy in there. Where you weren't scared at all throughout the entire movie. I don't know if that was his purpose behind that or what, but that was my only gripe.
I think, too, though, that the character Bruce Campbell had was way more fleshed out in the second one than it ever was in the first one. Like, if you go back and watch the first one, I mean, Bruce Campbell really wasn't even a big part of that movie. He didn't really have a whole lot to do or say in the first film. I mean, he was probably the lead only because he was the only one that survived, but he didn't have any real presence in the film. In the second one, though, it's very clear it's just him, and they give him, like, the best lines. He's got the best shit to do. He's much more talented as an actor by that point. He's much more well-defined, and, like, there's the scene where he has the fight with his own hand, which he completely does by himself, you know, where he flips himself over and, like, acts like his hand is possessed by the demons. I mean, it was probably, like, the best thing that he's ever done, in my opinion, like, by far.
Who's Sam Raimi?
No.
Oh, Bruce Campbell.
Bruce Campbell, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely, like, you notice a huge difference between Bruce Campbell's character because, like, at that point in time, like, when they shot the first Evil Dead, he really didn't act like he knew what the fuck he was doing.
Well, he probably didn't. He's probably, like, what, 19 or 20 or something when
probably.
He shot that?
So, yeah. But, yeah, I always liked Evil Dead 2. I mean, I think that a lot of the people, like, I remember when we were kids, we didn't even know about a first Evil Dead movie. We saw Evil Dead 2 everywhere, though, the VHS Evil Dead 2 with the skull on it. Like, that was in every fucking video store. And you're like, is that one of those movies where they didn't have a first one, they're just doing that to be funny or something? That's what I always thought, I swear it was.
Yeah.
And, cause like, they would do that with, Return to Horror High was one too, where I was like, is that a sequel? I don't remember Horror High. You know.
There wasn't a Horror High, was
there? No, I don't think so.
I don't know, though. I mean, you are right. The story is exactly the same. For some reason or another, though, everything else in it is done a lot better, except for the fact that I think the first one was scarier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely had too much comedy in the sequel, and the first one was, it just had an ambiance to it that the second one didn't have. The second one had like you're in a haunted house ride or something. You know, it was just, it was kind of scary, but it was goofy as fuck at the same time. Where the first one was just that, I don't know what it was really. I mean, maybe part of it is they didn't have a big enough budget to do things a certain way. So they were being creative and just like the stuff where the camera pans and they would do the background noise there that would make it even more scary, and like the music and stuff. I always thought the first one was way scarier than the second one.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure why it was as scary, but
I was scared.
The second one, it seems to me, though, in terms of combining the acting and the special effects and the camera work and everything else, I mean, you're hard-pressed to find anybody that did that as well as he did with that movie.
Yeah.
So good job, Sam Raimi.
Yeah, Sam Raimi's off the chain. So we started with fucking Peter Jackson, and we ended with Sam Raimi. It was a hell of a year, 1987.
I remember, too, recently looking at an old Fangoria convention that was actually around that time, I think, where they had, like, Sam Raimi was there, Peter Jackson was there, Don Coscarelli was there, Angus. I'd have fucking shit my pants to have been at that convention back all those guys were at it.
Yeah.
Because that'll never happen again.
No, probably not. But that is the year in horror that was 1987. And we're going to take a break. And I've got, I just got a text. I believe Jess is on the way. We're going to have the mailbag.
Oh, shit.
That's going to be interesting. It's going to be a deep, moist bag this weekend.
God. Yeah, it's going to be sticky.
So, we'll be back after this break here on Dead Pit. Hey, Uncle Bill!
Yeah!
How you doing?
I'm Kim Hyden.
You know Dead Pit fans out there? Not a lot of them know about the midweek obliteration.
I thought everybody knew. It's the hottest thing going today.
You can go on Facebook. Check it out on the Dead Pit Universe page. Brand new show almost every damn week. You can hear us bullshitting.
And, in a historical first, there's a new member of Dead Pit. Jesco!
Hey, Jesco.
Hi.
You like joining in on the Midweek Obliteration every week? You like getting obliterated by two Eastern Kentuckians, don't you?
Lay it down with your sweet, sultry voice.
obliterate all over my face.
You know, yeah, you know you have a lot of guys that masturbate your voice on a weekly basis now.
Oh, God, it's like, Oh, it's dead.
She's a girl. She likes hormones. She's on dad pad. That's the perfect girl for me.
I'll just tame a little bit in my pants.
How's that make you feel? You're now like a hillbilly sexual icon.
A hillbilly sexual icon?
Yeah.
Oh,
like
shit.
Goats and sisters.
And you can hear all about it. Hey, I ask Jessica some of the nastiest shit known to man almost every week on the Midweek Obliteration, and she answers it, and she has respect for it, don't you?
What the fuck? She has respect for this question.
Yeah,
I respect
for me. Telling her about what a blumpkin he is and all that.
Oh, good Lord.
She's going to try that on Uncle Bill over there.
Nobody touching me when I'm shitting. I don't give a damn what the reason is.
Even if I go in there and be like, hey.
I'm going to get out. What are you doing? You crazy.
Pull your dick out of the toilet. Give it to me.
Oh, God.
Hear all that on the midweek.
Obliteration.
Yay.
Fucking shit. Howdy. Welcome back, everybody.
Hi.
It's that special segment of the show now. We ain't done this in a long time, have you, Uncle Bill?
It's been a while, but this is everybody's favorite segment.
Yeah. It's the mail.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
How you doing, Miss Bag?
I'm all right. How are you?
How is your bag this week?
It's all right.
Is it?
It's medium.
Is it bagtastic?
It's not pulpous or anything this week. It's just,
I don't really understand what pulpous means.
It means full of pulp.
Yeah, but this has nothing to do with pulp.
Talked about pulp before. Now, let's talk about something else.
I know. I just don't
pulp.
Get it.
Expanded. Is your bag expanded today?
It's about...
Her bag is expanding slowly but surely.
Yep.
It's got to get nice and gaping wide.
Ooh!
So.
All right.
Soon it'll be dripping out oily pus.
Discharge.
Yeah.
Oily pus.
So let's...
Discharge.
Aaron will be passing out. He'll be like... Oh, God!
Let's see what kind of discharge we've got in it this week.
Okay.
Ooh. So let's see what we got. Yethicole.
Okay. Aaron Taylor says, CK and Uncle Bill, hypothetical question. If you were a necrophiliac, which dead celebrity or actor would you fuck?
Marilyn Monroe.
That'd be a good
back
one.
In the day. Of course, now she'd be like duffed.
Duffed in the wind.
He'd be like, hey, he'd be like fucking ashtray, Aaron, Uncle Bill. What about recent, though? Like
somebody that's died recently?
You said Elizabeth Taylor.
Now, here's what...
No, I mean, but no.
Did
like,
you see the nude photo of Elizabeth Taylor, though?
No, I didn't.
That's actually online somewhere.
Here's what I'll say, though.
Back in the day,
if this was back in the day, and this person had died and left that looking corpse, I always thought that back in the day, Anna Nicole Smith was really hot. And then...
Actually, like, she was, before she died, she was back to looking pretty damn hot,
yeah,
too.
So I would have to... Yeah, I'll say her. Crawl up inside of her like a...
But we were talking about Elizabeth Taylor's nude photo. It wasn't recent.
Right.
Back in the 40s,
I think.
It was, yeah. And
that'd be awesome if it was recent, though.
If it was recent, like, it'd have to be like one of those, like, landscape photos because her titties would be fucking hanging, like, down to her ankles and shit. It'd be like empty meat socks.
Yeah, somebody had to fucking get her titties in a headlock to pull them up.
I gotta say, though, I didn't even realize, like, I'm not a big, like, usually Elizabeth Taylor, people that are into that sort of stuff were from that era, and I didn't really know that she looked that good back in the day, but yeah.
She did, though, didn't she?
She was off the chain.
What did you do to your madman mask?
I put a Kofi Kingston thing on her. Isn't that killer?
It looks pretty cool.
Madman's a fan of Kofi.
Looks like a hippie.
That.
Boom.
Does it look like a hippie now?
He needs some shelter. All right, Jessica.
All right.
What we got, buddy? We got a big bag now.
I don't even know what your answer was.
We already gave it.
Yeah, Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, okay. That's right. Brian Kendall says, what is more annoying, stupid mailbag questions or stupid call-ins?
Stupid call-ins. I can answer that easily.
The problem with call-ins is that you're kind of expected to be at least nice to the person that they're calling, even though... you know, a lot of the time
really
you
want to be.
You can't stand like the question. They're not really have any questions, so you have to sit there and like stumble around. At least with the mailbag, we can end it whenever we want to.
Yeah, we can make fun of them.
Yeah.
So if he's since he asked that, he's gonna say, "Have you guys ever worked on The Happening, the song you started singing during the 08 year in review?"
No, but we actually still sort of remember it all then, though. Being over 2 years later.
I hear that M. Night Shyamalan's actually working on another film right now.
M. Night Shyamalan's always going to be working on other films, but all those films are going to suck. So.
No, he did that one, Devil.
That wasn't his.
He just produced it.
Oh, I was going to say, that one wasn't that bad. That one.
I just can't believe anybody would fucking... Weirdo. And I think Will Smith's in it or something like that.
Oh,
like,
God.
The problem with that is, though, is it doesn't matter who's in it. That guy just cannot direct a movie now at all.
Well, I mean, all of his movies, too, they bomb, really. I mean, none
it's
of them really do
directing
it.
It's not directing that's bad. It's his writing.
It's the whole fucking thing, really. it's who he chooses to...
It's the whole story itself, like.
It's the story. I mean, I don't really mind how he's directing, but it's the story.
You know the South Park though, where they're trying to like come up with ideas, and he's one of them, and they get him on there, and it's like all he can do is come up with twists. He can't come up with like any ideas. That's exactly how he is in real life. Like all of his movies are. There's not really anything original about him anymore. They're just
and usually
a bunch
like
of twists.
The casting choices in his movies are usually pretty off too.
Like how the hell do you get Mark Wahlberg to be a science teacher? Like, out of everybody in the world, that's the guy, the least likely guy to actually teach science.
I liked him in The Fighter.
Yeah, but because he was a fighter. You can see him being a fighter.
Yeah.
Because he's a meathead, but you can't see him being a freaking science teacher.
Yeah, they should have got, like, fucking Mr. Penix to be the science teacher. And,
quiet! Nobody.
Class! Shut up!
Nobody understands that reference except us.
Yeah, but he was our science teacher. Yeah. Or he was a chemistry teacher, actually.
Yeah.
He was a nerd, but he was hilarious.
Okay, go ahead.
Is this Marvin Burrito? Is his last name Burrito?
You quit being racist, Jessica.
It's Burrito.
Burrito?
Burrito. Marvin Burrito.
Looks like Burrito.
It could be Marvin Chimichanga. So.
He says, what's going on?
Ah.
If you guys had a chance to do one thing for a week and had no other choices... Which would it be? Snort as many kilos of cocaine as possible, or live on an island full of cannibals. Keep up the good work.
Wow, that officially might take the place for one of the dumbest fucking questions I've ever heard anybody ask.
Would you rather snort as many kilos of cocaine or live on an island full of cannibals?
How do those things even equate to each other?
I don't know.
One is clearly... Much worse than the other.
Yeah, okay.
Cocaine isn't really all that bad. I take cocaine.
You said cocaine gave you the shits.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Cocaine does give you the shits.
I can proudly say that I've never tried cocaine, but I would choose that over cannibals any day.
Yeah, that I don't really
Let's
understand
say,
the question.
Get high on a pot or
get eaten. Get killed.
Get eaten. Son of a bitch, what am I going
to
choose?
I'd love to see you, though, snort a bunch of cocaine running around.
Oh, my God. That'd be awesome.
We should do that in a skit or something.
Oh, shit. I can't stop. I can't stop talking, Aaron. Oh!
I'm crazy.
Oh.
Well. Okay.
Let's go, Bubsy.
I'm sorry. Monty Ray Ross Davis Jr.
Sammy Davis Jr.'s brother.
That's his boy.
It says, into the pit was fucking awesome. I was really happy with how well it is made. You could have made me cry.
Was it awesome, Aaron? I don't know.
You're going to make me cry.
Continue on, Jessica.
Okay. I was really happy with how well it is made and just getting to know you guys better from it. Keep up the great work with what you do. Also, real quick question. Have you guys seen the Blu-ray for The True Story of WrestleMania? I mean, the doc itself is kind of cool, but the best part is all the matches that's there as a bonus feature in high def.
Well, I'm glad that you enjoyed Into the Pit, sir.
Yeah, me too.
I'm happy that we got to sell a bunch of them at Whorehound Weekend. Ooh! What a rush. And as far as the... I've seen the True Story WrestleMania documentary. I've actually got a review up of it on the Retro Wrestling Night channel. And I don't know. I didn't think too much. I mean, I thought it was... The first part of it was okay, and then it... They had 26 WrestleManias to talk about, so they were really rushing through it for 2 hours. It was a 2-hour documentary. And I think the first three they had some pretty good info on. They only had really behind the scenes footage from like WrestleMania 9, and the rest of it was like, oh, let's turn and talk about this.
I've never seen it. I have no idea, but I've been told it's not very good.
A lot of people like it, though. I mean, I've heard from a lot of wrestling fans that really dig it.
Well, here's the thing. I look at that kind of like his name was Jason. I mean, I'm sure there's some people that like that documentary just because it was about Jason. But for anybody that has watched a lot of horror films, it's just going to be a bunch of the same shit and a bunch of people talking that don't make, that doesn't add anything new to a conversation. So it's probably the same way that documentary was.
Yeah. Now, something that, I don't know, you guys, whose question was that?
Sammy Davis Jr.'s brother, Monty.
Terrence Davis Jr. None of the matches are in HD on it, other than the ones from like 2008 onward. So don't be fooled by just the fact that it's on Blu-ray. None of that stuff was even shot, you know. It was all shot on video until 2008. So
that's not HD, buddy. You got robbed.
Okay. Allison Boheem? Is that how you say it?
Broheem.
Courtney says, thanks for the fantastic march. Reggie is as laid back as they come, and Baldwin was a treat. So cool you guys have to focus on such an original movie line. Hope you all are doing good and having fun at Whorehound.
And we did have a lot of fun at Whorehound.
Thank you, Allison.
And I'm glad you enjoyed the shows. We enjoyed doing them.
We like doing theme shows. We should do more of them.
Yeah. You know, May is coming up.
Really?
So it's going to be May, huh?
So I wonder how many computers are going to lose their audio this time.
We should start booking shows for that.
Wasn't one guy bitching about how...
Yeah, it did blow his speakers out.
Blew his speakers out.
How I actually used to say, May of the Dead.
Right, yeah.
You used to wind yourself up for it. I remember... Well, I was here to do it. I'm like, shit. I heard.
You weren't here last May.
When I was listening.
Oh. I'm sure I pissed you off a few times. Like, shit.
Okay.
Yeah, but we may do that again for May of the Dead. If we can think of fucking shit. Yeah.
I was looking up, though, man. We've interviewed almost everybody from Day of the Dead you could interview, really. And then you're like, we've never interviewed anybody from Dawn of the Dead at all, except for Tom Savini. Well, and a couple of zombies, but I mean,
I think there's a couple people we could probably get to have a decent May of the Dead.
Is it about Dawn of the Dead, though? Why won't any of those people do an interview? I don't get that.
We could get some of the biker gang people.
What was it like, buddy, being in that motorcycle? Oh, it was killing. Driving around that mall.
I actually think there's a Friday the 13th coming up, too.
There is, yeah.
I don't know if it's in May or June.
I think it's May, because I remember...
Oh, my God.
...coming across that date, yeah.
What am I going to do, Aaron? What am I going to do?
Probably jack shit. It don't matter anyway. Go, bud!
Okay. Bradley Lee Costello says, hey, zombie here. When the hell... are you guys going to interview Nick Frost and Simon Pegg? And great interview with Reggie, one of the best.
Thank you. Thank you. When are we going to interview those guys? I'd love to interview those guys. As a matter of fact, I think I tried to find them one time and Edgar Wright, but
it's just, how the hell are you going to get contact information for them? You'd have to go through, like, their agents, and I don't know how to get a hold of their agents.
Yeah, it's mighty shitty.
Yeah.
I mean, we would do it, but, like, I just don't know how to contact
them. And Edgar Wright's got a website, but he specifically says in there that, I mean, if you send him anything about interviews, he won't even look at it, so.
Edgar Wright's kind of a douchebag in interviews, too. Like, I don't know if.
I've never seen him, like, interviewed, really.
I mean, I don't know if he puts it on or if he's just like a Bruce Campbell type that is a douchebag.
I don't know. I'd love to interview him, though. Because we went and see Paul, of course, and it was pretty funny.
When the hell did that happen? I didn't get to see it.
We went and see, like, about 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks ago.
It was before Horrorhound.
Yeah.
It was a little bit before Horrorhound.
I wanted to see that.
It was cute. We quit flipping us off.
You all mean to me.
No. We took you to see Insidious and you shit your pants.
I want to say Paul.
Shit.
He looks so sad.
I wanted to say it. I was the one that told you about it.
I'm sorry.
You wouldn't know about it.
I still
want to
see Battle of LA, but I don't want to go see it. I'm sorry. It's probably out of the theaters now. I just want
to. Why couldn't you motherfuckers went to see that?
I wanted to.
Because I'd rather cut
but
my own dick off.
I want to see Paul.
You'd rather say what I want to see.
Fuck you.
I want to see Paul.
Okay. Matthew Hahn says, mail back. I'm not. Hey, guys and gals. Been listening to the show for about a year now, but this is my first time writing in. Listening to Dead Pit has helped me keep my sanity during my double shifts at work. So thanks for that and all that you guys do for the horror community.
You're welcome.
I know you guys are big fans of Stephen King, so I was wondering if you have read anything by Joe Hill.
No.
He currently has two of his novels, Heart-Shaped Box and Horns, as well as his comic series, Lock and Key, being optioned for movies and TV, and his writing is quite good, so I think his books are worth checking out if you haven't already. My other question involves, oh wait, let's go back to that.
Here's the thing, and we've mentioned this several times. Number one, I don't read anything really that's not non-fiction. If it's fiction, I probably won't read it at all. Unless it's like a magazine or something like that. And
I don't read anything unless it's a pop-up book or a picture book.
Jess, you would be the only one that would actually read anything like that.
Actually, I haven't read any of Joe Hill's stuff yet.
That's Stephen King's son.
Yeah. I wanted to read Heart-Shaped Box, but
you know his kid was
a
little boy in Creepshow?
I remember that.
The one that Tom Atkins smacked in the face.
Mm-hmm. Looks just like Stephen.
You know Tom Atkins still does that today, little kids.
he almost does.
He's a douche.
Can't my shit shut up.
I'm from Pittsburgh. Yeah, fuck you.
You know what? I understand a lot of people like him and stuff. A lot of people like people because they think they're friends with him behind the scenes and all that. And I understand that, but
I guess Candace was saying that.
He does not treat people very well, from what I've seen.
One of our friends was saying that it's Cinema Wasteland, that he wasn't that bad. He was being nice to people and everything.
Oh, well.
Y'all get one chance, buddy.
Well, that's what I've seen.
One chance makes first impression.
That's the thing with us, like.
We don't forgive and forget.
The pit never forgets. Okay. And Mother Love taught us that we can't forgive or forget.
What's behind the door? Is it Tom Atkins? We don't forget. We don't forgive him either. We forget.
Tom Atkins was just such an asshole when we met him. Like, there's no way. I don't give a fuck who we know that's friends with him. You know, everybody says, oh, Tom's a nice guy and everything. He was a douchebag. And I'll tell everybody that, and that'll continue on the show.
Well, the thing is, like, I don't really judge people by the way they treat the people that they think they're, that, like, work on movies or that are agents or stuff like that. I judge them on how they actually treat the fans, because that's the only people that really, in my mind, really count towards anything. So, I mean, he may treat other people that he sees as equals great, but he treats fans, the couple times I've seen him, people that I've talked to, experienced him.
Yeah, but no, hardly anybody knows Tommy Atkins except for the horror community. Well, and, like, he really is really nothing.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, that's what I always say. I mean, at the end of the day, who the fuck is any of these motherfuckers? There might be two or three of them that actually would be considered celebrities in Hollywood or something. But the rest of these guys are fucking nobodies. Mm-hmm. Think about it.
I love how this guy has questions about Joe Hill and me bitch about Tom Atkins.
Well, that's how we roll.
I'm just saying, though, that I had one good we had one good experience with Tom Atkins and one really horrible experience with Tom Atkins.
I think there's a definite...
I've talked to people that have had really bad experiences with Tom Atkins, and I've talked to people that have really good experience with Tom Atkins. But I just, in watching him and the way that he acted towards you especially, I was like, God Lord. I mean... There's really no...
Well, I mean, we saw how he acted with that little kid that was carrying all his shit, too.
He needs to have an IV of alcohol. That's
he's
all.
Just a... I don't know. I mean, I know that there's certain people, like I said, that will always defend him. And there's the same people that defend other people that we've trashed on the show. I think everybody that we've ever trashed on the show has really fucking deserved it. I don't think there's been anybody that, like... Because that's the thing, like, a lot of the times when we come up there, we come up as fans, people don't know who we are or anything, and, you know, you fuck us over one time, and you're fucked on Deadbeat for life.
And maybe that'll be an incentive for some of these people to actually treat the fans with respect, because you never know if somebody's going to actually have a show where they can talk about this shit for, like, 1,000 people that listen to it or what.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I mean, the thing is, I didn't even want to get fucking Tom Atkins' autograph when I went up to him. I've got his autograph I don't know how many goddamn times on different things. The only reason I came up to him is to try to talk to him about doing an interview.
Mm-hmm. Like that.
Now, he acts like I fucking smacked his mom in the face or something. Like, motherfucker, we've interviewed fucking John Carpenter, George Romero, and people like that. You're a fucking nobody. I mean...
So how do you really feel about him, though?
I'm just saying, that wouldn't have been that good an interview anyway, even if we did do it.
He talks to everybody like they're lower than him. And it's so annoying.
That'll be $20.
I'll grab my shitty autograph.
But yeah, I'm never, ever, and I'll tell everybody that I'm ever at a show where he's at, don't waste your money on him. It's a fucking, it's like, it's wiping your ass with $20 is basically what it is.
It's a liar.
Matthew says, my other question involves my favorite horror franchise, Halloween. It's inevitable that there will be a sequel in the future. I was just wondering what direction you would want to see the series take after Zombies' lackluster films. Thanks again, and keep up the great work. His name is... What's that? What is he on the board? Dead Men Rise?
Dead Men Rise?
Yeah, he's Dead Men Rise on the boards. Well, that's who Matthew is. But, so there's going to be a Halloween 3? Is that what you, or Halloween? Cause
I'm sure eventually.
Yeah, they'll eventually do it for sure. But the question, I guess, is like, what direction would you want to see it going after he fucked it up? And there's been like a huge discussion on the board here lately about a lot of people that saying they really, really liked Halloween 2 and thought it was this dark masterpiece and all this stuff.
Dark piece of shit.
What the fuck movie are these people watching? Okay, even if you take away the fact that it was a Halloween movie, and you look at it as a completely separate movie that doesn't have anything to do with the series, how the fuck was that a good movie? And people are talking about, oh, shit, it was brutal. They smacked people's faces. My God, man. Like, what horror film that came out in the last 5 years hasn't been like that?
I just think it's like...
Insidious. It's been pretty good.
Yeah, well, that was like an exception to the rule.
It's sad you actually have to defend why Halloween 2 is shitty. Like, yeah. People don't know just by watching it. Like, this is insane.
It's visually stunning. It really is. Watching that motherfucker eat a dog, that's visually great.
And the unrated version, watch him walk around like he's a member of ZZ Top and moaning and shit. I honestly think, I swear to God on this, too, and I've heard this, And I don't know, like, 100% if it's true, but I know for a fact that it was a rumor going around Hollywood that Rob Zombie intentionally made that movie as shitty as he could, you know.
Well, I think that he just, I'm not sure if he may try to make it intentionally shitty, but he definitely just avoided any kind of connection with the original series in that film and tried to make it, like, some sort of weird, I don't even know what you would call it, but it was never connected in any way to the original Halloween.
I mean, it makes, it even makes his original Halloween look like, you know, a classic in comparison.
Yeah, but that being said, though, even if he tried to make it completely different, like as a one-off film that he was going to direct, it's still an awful fucking movie, man. Like, I don't get it. I don't get what people see in some of these movies.
I don't either.
But whatever.
Yeah. I don't
Peaches
know,
on. There's got to be somebody out there that likes Frankenstein's Bloody Nightmare.
Oh, I'm sure there is. That's the thing about movies. I mean, it's just such a, you know, there's somebody that likes anything. I mean, there's probably somebody out there that is a fan of, well, Frankenstein's Bloody Nightmare is about the shittiest thing I can think of.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's a fan of everything. But Halloween 3, where's it going to go?
Oh, we never did answer the question. We should talk about it. Let's see. Okay, so that one ended with he took out Loomis, right? And then Lori was supposed to be the killer. Or she went insane and she was going to take over the killing or something.
Well, the whole thing is, and you know what? I mean, I don't even have the theatrical cut. The theatrical cut, as shitty as the movie was infinitely better than that stupid unrated cut.
Yeah.
Which, at least it left you guessing at the end. It's like, what in the fuck is really going on?
I would bet that they will probably not even deal with the fact that part two existed if they go back and do a part three. It'll probably pick up where the first one left off or something like that.
It'll probably just be a separate story altogether. I mean, it'll probably be the easiest way to go about it.
I don't think they should go back into the mythology stuff either, because that crap never really worked even in the original series. But I don't know. Make a movie like, now, who would be somebody that would be good to direct? Is what I'm trying to think. Like, what style of movie would actually kind of stay true to Halloween and be like an updated modern version?
I have no idea. The guy directed the Elm Street remake.
Shit.
I don't know. I think it might be a little while before we see Halloween 3, though. Another 3 or 4 years at least.
What do you think, Jessica?
Yeah, even if it comes out, I won't watch it.
Yeah, you
will. I really don't care.
You won't have a choice.
You have to go.
So
there.
I just abandoned my free will.
Yeah, basically.
When I moved down here, I was like, oh, just check that at the door.
That's the way of the hillbilly.
He's got the hillbilly code. You know how it is.
You got the hill, yeah. I abandoned all free will. I'm not allowed to speak my mind.
Well, I get to read that next question.
Such a dick. Okay, Adam Thompson says, hey, Dead Pit Fellows and Jessica, just wanted to thank you for the many hours of talk show goodness. I have a couple of questions for you.
Well, thank you.
First off, I was just wondering where Doodly Doo comes from. It makes me laugh every time, but I just wanted to know.
Oh, this is an interesting one. We haven't got this question in a little while.
We haven't got it in a long, though.
It all started from, I guess it was Scarefest 2000. The first Scarefest. What year was the first Scarefest?
2008.
Okay, 2008. I believe we were sitting beside Kane Hodder. Like, we had a table right beside Kane Hodder, which is cool as hell. Like, there's all kinds of cool shit that happened that weekend with Kane Hodder.
Maybe it was 2009. I can't remember.
I think it was 2008. Yeah. That sounds about right. And there's these fucking hillbilly people. You could tell, like, they stuck out like a sore thumb. This old woman, her daughter. The old woman didn't have any fucking teeth at all. She was, like, gumming like crazy. And then the daughter had all of her teeth were black, and they're getting ready to fucking fall out.
Yeah.
And she had, like, her little grandson with her or whatever. And these people were oblivious to any damn thing convention wise. They were thinking, oh, look over here. Doodle. Hey, Doodle. You know. The little grandson's name was Doodle.
Right.
His name was Doodle.
Doodle.
And I heard the old woman calling him Doodle. And I was like, that kid's fucking name's Doodle. And then from that, like, you started doing the that was their call or something, yeah, when he got lost or anything.
Well, the thing that was so funny is, like, they were with Kane Hodder, they were going crazy about Kane Hodder. Yeah. Like, look here, Kane Hodder, Doodle. And little Doodle was getting, little Doodle was probably what, about a year old, maybe.
Yeah.
Probably not even a year old. And they wanted him to get a picture with Kane Hodder. The little baby was asleep. And the grandma kept trying to wake him up. Doodle! Hey, Doodle! He never would wake up. They took the picture anyway. And I remember, like, I'd give anything to have that picture. That little baby, like, was fucking leaning on Kane Hodder. It looked like he was, like, trying to breastfeed off of him.
It did.
So the whole Doodle thing came back to the Scare Fest.
Good times.
Then he says, secondly, my absolute favorite franchise is the Halloween series. And I was wondering, besides number one, which is your favorite and least favorite? I personally enjoy H2O, but I wanted to know what you think. Thanks again so much for the racism and sexism and bigotry that you provide every week.
You're welcome, buddy. Halloween series.
I always liked the sequels. I probably like part four the best.
You know, oddly enough, I find myself watching part six more lately, and I like H2O too. A lot of people give that movie shit because they say it was like the Scream version, yeah, of Halloween or whatever. But first time I saw that movie, I really, really liked it. That was around the time that it first came out.
It's a shame that Echo Bridge fucked the Blu-ray up of it.
Did they? I haven't even really seen the Blu-ray of it.
We'll see it soon.
But, I mean, I didn't think it was bad at all, like H2O. I thought Resurrection was a thousand times.
The problem with H2O is it was another one of them damn Scream clones in a lot of ways. It was written by Kevin Williamson. So.
Yeah. But Halloween 6, for some reason, I don't know what you want to say about it, but it's like, it's one of those movies that's addictive to go back and watch.
It's true.
Every so often.
I think part of it is it was like that grunge era. There weren't a whole lot of slasher movies that came out around that time. So it's kind of like going back to when we were in high school.
I think it's a really dark movie, though, too. Like, yeah, it's one of the darker Halloween movies of the whole series.
It really, it sort of captures Halloween, too. Like, a lot of some of the sequels they did sort of failed to capture the mood. I kind of think H2O was one of those. And then, actually, all of them after H2O sort of failed to capture the mood of the Halloween movies.
Yeah.
Wake your ass up.
She was doodling. She drew a Pac-Man over or something.
Oh. We're going to auction off her pages over here on eBay.
Get it off.
He said, Brian Nick Cave says, hey guys and girl, heard that Sleepaway Camp 4? I can't read Roman numerals.
Yeah, it's four.
The survivor has been completed and is getting a DVD release soon. Apparently, they took what they had shot and edited a lot of scenes from the previous three films into it to create something of a cohesive storyline.
Well, that'll be a fucking masterpiece right there.
I don't know how the hell they could have done that, because I've got the extra DVD of, basically there were only like maybe 10 minutes of footage that was shot for that.
Yeah, it's awful too. None of it really makes any sense.
Like, I don't know if that's true or not. They'd have to just shoot a completely new movie.
Well, I mean, why would they want to do that when, like, they have things like Return to Sleepaway Camp that was so awesome? Yeah. You could build a sequel off that. Sleepaway Camp 15. I'm happier than fuck.
I like Sleepaway Camp.
Nobody likes Return to Sleepaway Camp.
No. Have you ever seen Return to Sleepaway Camp?
Yeah, you made me watch it.
Did I?
Yeah.
God, did you love it?
I don't really remember.
Exactly.
You should remember it being really shitty, though. Remember, like, the Felicia Rose in Drag? Mm-hmm. As the police officer.
That's so funny, just give it away. Remember, like, when she was dressed up as the cop the whole time, and it was clearly obvious that there was something.
Well, goddamn, I mean, yeah. Anybody watching that, you're like, what the fuck is going on there? I mean, even if you don't know it's Felicia Rose, it's like, oh, that's fucking awful looking.
Yeah. We're sorry, spoiler.
Fuck. You should be spoiled from that piece of shit, for real. Like, yeah. I don't know how anybody could like that. It's insanely awful.
Jacob Mahan says, I would like to know what you all do to relax on days when work is done, and how many ale beans goes down Uncle Bill's own?
How many anal beads do I own? I think was the last part of that question. I own a whole fucking dresser drawer full of them. I shove them all up my butt every night. God, that's good.
I pull them out with a track. Like, we talk about this. We talk about anal beads all the time.
Yeah.
Well, who invented anal beads? Yeah, I don't get how that would be pleasurable.
Yeah.
Let me show you.
A man or a woman.
Thing of beads at my butt and pull them out. I like the ones that are like, they get larger as they go up.
Yeah.
Those were hilarious looking.
And wouldn't the twine get to be brown after a while?
I'd say so.
Oh,
Christ. Fucking stink. You can put them in there.
Look at put this bead in there.
You gotta wash them out with Dawn.
You probably have to bleach them.
Yeah.
Bleach your anal beads.
So tell me, what pleasure do you get out of anal beads?
I just like them a lot in my butt. What was the first part of the question? What do we do for relaxing?
What do we do to relax when we are not working?
Well, anal beads, that goes hand in hand.
Yeah.
Who uses that?
This is kind of what we do for relaxation. This and
sleep.
Sometimes play music and shit. Watch horror films. What else you going to do for relaxation around here?
Hot shit. That's my favorite seat in the house.
Nice relaxing shit every now and then.
Ooh.
Seriously though, there's nothing like taking a total like passage.
The total passage, Lex Luger.
Yeah. It's a total passage. Like if you haven't shit for about a day or something, you're like, I know I've got a big old shit coming, and then you're like, oh, I can feel it now. It's gonna be a big one. Then you have like a big turd island in the toilet. Sticking outside.
Yeah, you texted me the other day with your turd island.
I tell everybody about
who will survive turd island.
Yeah.
What's the name of that match.com you can list in your hobbies? Take a big shit. You'd have all kinds of women on it. Oh, like shit.
I probably would. They'd be sick. I'm like,
How you doing?
Some of them want you to paint pentagrams of shit on their bed. Oh. No, but like, I don't know why, but I do enjoy taking big old shits. I've always enjoyed that since I was a young boy.
So I hope that answered your question, buddy. Thanks for bringing that up.
I also enjoy pissing people off on Facebook. That's a big
Yeah, that's a big like, goal of yours in life.
I remember Ivanka, you remember her
from
Rue Morgue? Posted something, I think it was today or yesterday or something, about the key to a good rider is to keep riding or something like that, some sort of quote. And I said, also, the key to good riding in horror is kissing a lot of ass. Be a good rider in horror now, you must kiss ass.
But we like Ivanka, though, a lot.
I do. I've got a thing for tattooed women.
Mm.
And non-tattooed women.
He's just got a thing for women.
Yeah.
Okay. Wolfman says, hey guys and gal, one of the highlights of any Dead Pit show is the songs you come up with. Ever thought of putting out a CD of your music? Hits from the Pit, I'd buy one.
Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah, we've thought about that quite a bit. We probably will eventually come out with it.
How many songs have we got? We have to have at least 10 or 15
we should look. Yeah, I mean, that's always in the possibility, like, you know, I just don't know, like, CDs anymore. People don't really buy CDs that much anymore, though. It's all like a digital download or something, isn't it?
That's true, but they'll buy CDs from us because we can't make anything better.
I'm sorry, we're still... It's a shame how much the music business has gone down, though, with that. I mean, shit, it sucks.
Nobody, like, it's like the music business doesn't even exist anymore or anything, really. No,
it's not really a business anymore.
It's kind of like Best Buy and everything. Nobody, it's like that doesn't exist anymore. Really, people buy everything online, period, now. Like, except Walmart, for some reason.
You know, I mean, I've heard that Best Buy's in trouble.
Yeah, so if Best Buy goes out,
goddamn, where the fuck you gonna buy anything at? Like
online.
Movies or music or anything?
I think you will be able to. Okay.
Okay. Cody LL says.
Uh-oh, he's back.
He's back.
Down. His name is Cody LL. I was doing the theme to the man behind the mask today, on it.
I was doing he's back and badder than ever. Jack Bischoff's theme.
He says, you guys probably thought I was dead by this point since I haven't written any questions in over a month. I honestly couldn't think of anything to ask, but I've thought of some more questions, so woo! I'm back with a vengeance now. Before I ask, I just want to say that I thought Into the Pit was really good. I have an immense new respect for Uncle Bill after hearing what he plans to do with his life.
You don't have any respect for
me. I was going to say. What about... what about Wes? Anyway.
I command respect, goddammit.
Yeah. Anyway. I've been on a full sheet kick lately and watched the three movies of his that I have. I'm planning on getting that Beyond Blu-ray at some point, but someone told me that the first few copies have some slight bugs. How were the ones you guys got from Rob?
What now?
He's talking about the Beyond Blu-ray.
We didn't get him from Rob, though.
We got him from,
I guess we didn't get him
from Rob. How the hell did he know that, though?
I think we talked about it. We talked about it on the way home.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't gotten mine yet, but my understanding was that on some of the discs, like the first couple of minutes or something are in black and white.
You remember the flashback sequence in the beginning that tells the story of what happened to the guy that was haunting if you go back and watch it on the DVD, it's a sepia instead of black and white. It's not a major thing. But, what you can do is, though, Arrow Video, like you can email them and tell them you got the copy and just give them a copy of the receipt. And they'll send you the replacement when it's available. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I heard they corrected it after the first initial run of them, I guess. So you probably, if you buy it now, you probably won't get it anyway.
Yeah,
I think.
Probably not. So yeah, and the thing is, if you want to get it on Blu-ray, it'd probably be about the only way you'll get it, because I'm pretty sure Grindhouse won't have it for at least, it'd probably be 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, if that, you know, because they're really slow about releasing stuff. So buy it that way, Cody.
Buy it, baby.
And also, he says, finally I want to say congratulations to Uncle Bill and Jess. Better hope that kid looks like Jess.
I agree.
Just kidding. Don't hit. Peace, guys.
That kid's going to look like Mark Henry.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Congratulations, Jessica.
And if anybody wants to send any gifts, where can they send them to?
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah, if you want to send any baby gifts, like baby shower gifts or anything like that, then you can send them to, I guess, the Dead Pit. Address on the...
People can email us, how about that?
Yeah.
And we'll, because I don't want to give out no fucking address on the show.
Yeah. We'll just give...
Well, that Dead Pit address is already kind of...
No, it's not. I took it off.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll let you know then.
You can email us deadpit@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Anybody that wants to send me anything for free, too, can email me there, too.
Because I'll be honest with you, like, some of the things that have happened to us in the last 6 months would lead me to believe that if I gave out the address on here, somebody would be on my doorstep.
Hello, Aaron.
We already got a weirdo on our doorstep.
I heard you were pregnant. I'm going to rip that baby out there and eat it.
Something like that.
We have a lot of psychotic people after us.
Yeah.
It's scary. Plus, we have to deal with Jess on a daily basis.
I know.
Yeah,
that's
bad
enough.
This psycho just moved on in.
Yeah. So, is that it for the questions?
Well, that's it.
Oh, no.
Well, actually, you got to get out of here now, don't you?
Yes, I do. I got to go.
Well, yeah! Get
I'm
out
leaving.
Of my property.
Jess has got to go. What's she got to do, Uncle Bill?
I got to go wait for the guy to mow the lawn.
She's got a Jack Johnson convention she's got to go to.
I thought it would be awesome.
Yeah. Nobody else around here give a fuck. You'd be the only one there.
He's going to be selling flip-flops.
Who the fuck is Jack Johnson?
Well, if it's just Jack Johnson means some flip-flops, I'd be happy.
He's super mellow.
My name is Jack Johnson. I'm singing for the hippies. I'm singing for the hippies. Let's go eat watermelon and watch the Today Show.
Cargo shorts.
Yeah.
I got my cargo shorts. I got a parrot as a pet.
Ultimate frisbee. Jimmy Buffett now?
I look like Jeff Corwin, who loves the animals.
He does look like Jeff Corwin.
He does.
It's weird.
Yeah. Except he looks even more.
Anyway, shit on Jack Johnson.
Yeah.
Seriously.
So anyway, we're going to take a break. Jess is going to get out. And we'll finish up the show with some reviews.
We'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Scout Sheila Compton, and you are listening to DeadPit.com.
There was a little girl, and she had a little curl right in the middle of her forehead. And when she was good, she was very, very good. And when she was bad, she was... The Little Girl Who Lives Down the Lane, starring Jodie Foster, the sensation of Taxi Driver and Bugsy Malone, in another superb performance as Rin, who seemed all sugar and spice, but something not so nice was buried out in her garden. You can thank heaven for little girls, but you can thank hell for the little girl who lives down the lane. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the programming. So,
it's the review section.
It is. So announcement.
Kick Jess the fuck out of here again.
Real quick, we're gonna make an announcement again.
Inferno. Talk about that. We're giving that away. Reviewed it yet? But we're gonna give it away.
We're giving away. We're gonna review it next week, probably though. And we got three copies of the special edition, new special edition DVD giveaway. All you gotta do, like I said, is go to deadpit@gmail.com.
Deadpit@gmail.com. Email us.
You email us a picture of your favorite kill scene or favorite sequence. Like you reenacting that in a picture.
Oh, here's a good idea too. Here's a good idea too. That way we can get the Facebook universe involved. You can upload your picture to the Facebook universe page as well.
Yeah.
And that way we can see it too. A favorite scene from Argento movie reenact it. Be creative. If you don't have another person to be in the cast, use a dog or a cat or something.
Use a chair.
Yeah.
Dress up your chair.
And that'll be funny. And other stuff, like I said, Deadpit on the Road Season 3 will be available next week. The Two Death Pillbilly Edition,
woo!
Baby. And what else? New on the road we got with Insidious. Are you man enough to take the Deadpit challenge? That's what we're asking people right now.
I'm amazed, though, at some of the negative feedback, though, people have about that movie. It's like, God damn it. You go and find a movie like that, and you're completely blown away by it, and there's a group of people who's like, oh, it ain't nothing. It's shitty.
It's pretty cool, though, that, like, James Wan himself actually responded to the video on Facebook.
Yeah. So how many other people out there that have any kind of horror radio show or podcast can say that James Wan directly responds to you and watches your on-the-road reviews of the stuff that he does?
He watches all of them, he told us.
Is anybody else like that? I'll bet there's not.
No. Those people are too worried about, like, how awesome 42nd Street Pete is.
They're like, shit, he's killer. He talk about 42nd Street.
No offense to him. I don't really know him. I'm just saying. I think it's funny.
Yeah. He could be the greatest guy ever.
He probably is. He's probably really nice. He's nice like Sal Lizard was. We had a table next to Sal Lizard. That guy was a killer.
So now that we know Sal Lizard and he's nice, we got to talk shit about Ron Bonk from now on.
Yeah.
We don't know him.
Bonk until you drop.
That'd be a killer shirt for him. Bonk till you drop.
So any other things that we need to mention on here?
No.
Nothing else.
Another one would be Bonk if you're horny. That'd be a good one.
If this van is bonking, don't come and knock. So anyway, let's get into the Blu-ray diff. First up is a movie that came out a couple of weeks ago. The 25th Anniversary Edition, Rob Reiner movie. Stand By Me, Uncle Bill, which was an adaptation from the novel of The Body, which is in the Different Seasons book. I actually have. That's one of the Stephen King books I have. I think it's the only one I have.
Was that Rogel the Adopt or The Body?
That was Buddha Count.
Oh, Buddha Count.
Book of the Bull.
Yeah.
And this is another one, like, this isn't exactly a horror movie, but, you know, it's got some horror elements to it, I guess, where a group of boys in a small Oregon town, very similar, I mean, we don't live in Oregon, but we're in a small town and grew up around people that were similar to this, and had a lot of, you know, I had friends at that age that I really, I don't know, it just reminds me of when I was like 12, 13 years old, that the age of these characters in this movie, where these kids decide to go on a hike to see a dead body of a kid that's been missing, I think. And it's basically like a coming-of-age movie and has some of the most amazing performances from kid actors that I've ever seen in a movie. I mean, especially... I think that Corey Feldman does an amazing job in this. River Phoenix always does a great job in the movies we saw him in. And Will Wheaton, who hadn't really been in much of anything, aside from shitty Star Trek shows and stuff, did a really good performance in this too.
Jesus. First of all, the thing that they did in this movie that I thought was really, really smart, and I'm sure not a lot of directors even do anything like this anymore, is they spent, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks before they even started shooting the movie, like with these kids, like letting them all get to know each other. And like, I don't know if they were rehearsing as much as they were kind of just like jacking around, you know, with letting them cut up and camp and stuff like that together and kind of get to know each other before they even started the actual process of making the film. Which is a great idea, because it has to look like in the film that these kids really, really get along and know each other and things like that. Uh-huh. It may have been a month that they spent. It was some amount of time.
Yeah.
And you can tell, though, because they do genuinely seem to interact with each other well. It's nothing is forced in this movie. And I remember Rob Reiner talking about when you watch the special features on this disc, he picked the people, the actors, by what they could do in the roles, and in terms of, you had to have one kid that was angry, and they picked Corey Feldman because he was angry at that time. Like, he had that side to him or whatever. You had to have one kid that was like a goofball, and that was Jerry O'Connell in the film, because that was his personality at that time. Like, you can't make kids act that far away from
who the way they
really are. And that's what he did. He picked people that were, They were kind of like that in their characters in the film.
And Will Wheaton's character was more along the lines of, like, I think that when Stephen King wrote the story, he was the Geordi, the Geordi character. He was talking about, you know, how he didn't ever really fit in, and he was like the weirdo.
He's the writer, I remember that.
He's the one that writes the stories, had the story of Lard Ass Hogan and the pie eating contest.
Which is the best part of the film, in my opinion, really.
And then, like, their rivals, I guess, are Kiefer Sutherland, who always at this time played an asshole character.
Yeah.
And his gang of buddies who wanted to find the body for themselves. And they all meet up in the end. And, you know, I mean, this is one of those movies that is infinitely rewatchable, though. I don't even really know why. I mean, because I've seen this movie so many times, I can almost, like, say it word for word, almost the entire movie. But it's like, I don't know, there's just something special about it. Like, I don't know exactly what they did. But it's one of those movies that you will never see a movie made like this anymore for some reason. Actually, I think Rob Reiner tried to do, I can't remember the damn name of it, but last year he made a movie that he was trying his best to recreate Stand By Me in it, and the people shit all over it because it was just, you can't force something like that. Movies like that just happen with kids. And most of the time you're going to have turds when you cast kids in movies because they can't, I mean, kids today, there's not too many good child actors anymore anyway. But they did a great job with the casting choices in this movie, especially. But, I mean, I don't know what else we can really say about the movie. Everyone, who doesn't like this movie? I mean, this is one of the better.
If you know, I mean, you know the movie that King wrote was based on his experiences, like his childhood experiences growing up with these kids. And a lot of the stuff in the movie really did happen, like the leech scene, which everybody knows about, really happened to Stephen King and some of his friends. And he talks about that on the special features where, you know, they were in jacking around and stuff in a kind of like a lake with still water and end up getting leeches all over them.
Yeah.
And also in the book, the real concentration is on the River Phoenix character. Like, he's the primary hero in the book, not Will Wheaton's character, who turns out to be like the primary focus with Richard Dreyfuss and all that stuff. So Rob Reiner did change it up some, but I think that actually makes the story better. That is the focus
for a movie,
on him.
At least.
Yeah, and I know King says this is one of his favorite adaptations that anybody's ever done of any of his books.
I believe it was the very first that was not horror.
Yeah, it was.
They did, and that would lead to like Shawshank Redemption and The Green Mile and more movies like that, and just an excellent movie. I mean, I couldn't see anybody giving this less than 5 stars. The Blu-ray itself is really good too.
Oh, the Blu-ray is amazing. Like, the transfer on the fucking disc is outstanding. It looks like an entirely different movie. It really does.
Yeah. And it just, and this is one that you can get for cheap too. It's like $12 on, at Walmart and, Amazon, I think.
Special features are really good. It's got in-depth documentary. Like, when they go back, they get everybody except, well, of course, River Phoenix, but, Richard Dreyfuss on there, Will Wheaton's on there, Gerald Collins on there, Kiefer Sutherland's on there, and, Corey Feldman. They get all the main people.
Yeah, they actually have a brand new Blu-ray, exclusive picture-in-picture video commentary.
Right.
That's brand new just for this Blu-ray. With Rob Reiner, Will Wheaton, and Corey Feldman, where I guess they have picture in picture where they're
certain
actually watching
scenes,
the movie.
Yeah,
that's really cool to watch. And I would love to see, of course, more features on this. But I don't know if Kiefer Sutherland ever talked about. Did they ever get him to talk about the movie?
Yeah, he's on the documentary in this.
Okay,
on this.
The documentary is like, I think on the original DVD, I think that that was on when the DVD came out in like 2000 or something.
But for some reason, he looks drunker than shit in that. He probably was, actually.
Yeah. But, and it also has the music video on it, which made the song, what was it called? Benny King or something like that. That song was another big hit in the 80s because of this movie.
No doubt. Yeah.
So,
But yeah, you got to get that though. You got to get Stand By Me.
I'm yeah, it's probably definitely the top two favorites of all time for me, and it was great to see it in Blu-ray disc.
Here's another HD. One though, and this one. The next film we're going to be talking about, I don't give a shit what anybody says from here on out. I hear about people dissing this movie all the time. This movie was either responsible for you getting into horror films again now, or it reinvigorated your love of horror films when it came out. Because before this movie came out, horror was dead as fucking disco. It was dead. And then this movie comes along, and it restarts the whole thing. It's the reason why we're sitting here today. Yeah. I guarantee it.
Well, the thing that I noticed, too, about watching it again is I think that what it did is it made horror cool again.
It did,
like,
yeah.
For so many years there, it was not the end thing to be a fan of horror movies. Like, probably throughout the entire decade of the 90s until 96, it just, like, the character, the Randy character that... the hell was the guy's name? Jamie Kennedy
right.
played, who was naming off all this trivia and stuff from various horror movies, 80s horror movies and stuff. It really made it just, I don't know, accepted by the modern audiences to be a fan of horror again. And I think that was another big thing that it did too. But I mean, what can you say about this? I mean, this is a movie when it came out, it made like over $100 million. At the box office.
It was incredible, phenomenal when it came out. I remember that, like, going to see it at least two times, like, right when it came out, because everybody was going to see it. Like, it didn't matter who it was. Even in high school, we were in high school when it came out. Jocks, preps, stoners.
Everybody was talking
about
it. Nerds. Yeah.
Everybody went and saw this movie. It was like, it crossed all the boundaries.
Yeah, and we haven't really seen a movie like that in a long time.
Yeah.
Since, I don't even know if we have since.
Blair Witch was the only other one I can think of that was like, people had to go, you had to go fucking see the movie.
Because everyone was talking about it, yeah.
So, I mean, I don't get too much into the plot or anything, but Scream was basically a movie in a movie. It was a movie about a serial killer that loves horror films and reenacts, you know, parts of horror films, and you got the backstory with Neve Campbell, who is being stalked, mm-hmm. I guess, by the killers throughout the film. And that's where really the most infamous parts come from, where they're making the phone calls to her, you know. And then at the beginning of the film with Drew Barrymore.
Hello, Sydney.
Yeah, the what's your favorite scary movie shit and all that.
Yeah, I always liked the part. I always loved it. I don't know why. Like, I don't know if anybody else ever caught this too, in the beginning with Drew Barrymore, where she keeps hanging up on him, and she said something like, you quit calling here, motherfucker. I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to call the police or something. And the killer was like, if you hang up on me one more time, I'll gut you like a fish, bitch. And he goes, oh, yeah.
Like the Macho Man.
Oh, my God. That guy. Yeah, right after you said all these,
thinking.
I really liked that, though. I thought
that'd be a killer idea for a sketch, though, is if Macho Man called you and was asking you what your favorite.
Yeah.
What's your favorite WrestleMania, huh? But anyway.
Yeah. The Blu-ray, though. What the fuck? Everybody knows about Scream. My God, if you're listening to the show.
The Blu-ray is by Lionsgate, and the movie, I guess, was originally a Miramax film, but Miramax is licensing all of its stuff out right now, apparently. And I got to be honest, I probably shouldn't even get into this, but we're in the spirit of being truthful, even if they never send me another thing. I've never been overly impressed with any Lionsgate Blu-ray. I swear to God, like, every one I've ever seen.
Well, if it's a brand new movie, I mean, it probably looks pretty good.
They just don't blow me away, though. Like, the transfer on Stand By Me, I don't know who did send me. Was that Sony?
Sony.
It's fucking amazing. Like, you get, and then you get like something like Scream, and it's like, it's only made in like 96.
Yeah.
It should be fucking outstanding. It's just like, eh. It's better than the DVD.
Oh yeah, it's better. The DVD wasn't even anamorphic.
Yeah.
So if you got a widescreen TV, it's going to look real shitty.
I mean, it is like, there's no doubt it's better than the DVD, but still, it just didn't have that quality where I was sitting there watching it thinking, this really blows me the fuck away. Like, it's amazing looking. It wasn't that way.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, I had heard that the sequels look a lot better for some reason, but I don't know what it is, the first movie. I mean, it looked good. It was brighter and it was more colorful and stuff like that. But like, you're like, shit, it's not that old, man. It should look a little better than that. But it unfortunately it doesn't. But at least it's widescreen, it's anamorphic, and it is technically an HD.
Yeah, it's the best movie of the series, really. I mean, I like the second one. I even like the third one. But hands down, this is the best movie in the series of films.
Yeah, and it's weird, though, because, like, we were always talking about on the show, Scream was one of those movies that was never, ever re-released on DVD. Mm-hmm. Bizarrely enough, as big as a hit as it was always in that box set or the single edition, which is exactly the same as the DVD in the box set.
Yeah.
They never went back and, I mean, the original Scream DVDs came out in like 2000, you know, so it'd been over 10 years.
I think that might have been
years.
One of the very first DVDs I ever got, too.
Yeah, and it'd been over 10 years and they never went back and corrected the shit that was fucked up with Scream. And, you know, I don't know. It was just bizarre to me.
But, okay, special features on this disc. You got audio commentary by director Wes Craven and writer Kevin Williamson. You got a production featurette. You got behind the scenes on the Scream set and with Drew Barrymore. You got a Q&A with the cast and crew. It's in 1080p, all the standard stuff, widescreen, all this and that. If it's coming out through Lionsgate, it's probably relatively cheap too, because all that re-releases.
Well, I'm sure within a month or two it'll be $10.
Yeah, it's like $10 or $15, probably right.
I think
off
it's
the
like
bat.
$15 right now. If you wait a couple weeks, month, it'll be $10, no doubt.
It's definitely worth that, man. This is one of the classics of the genre. No way you can get around it.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, if my Blu-ray collection, people know I'll take any goddamn Blu-ray. But like the ones that you want to rebuy, to me, are the classics. I mean, the Scream movies, the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, Friday the 13th, Psycho, stuff like that. It's got to be a part of your collection. And especially, like, since the DVD was so fucked up of Scream, regardless of the transfer, you know, and who knows, maybe someday there'll be another Blu-ray of it. I would doubt it. But I would go ahead and pick it up. It'll be cheap enough. It'll be $10 within a couple of weeks or a month, I guarantee it.
Yeah. But next week, though, we probably should, like, all of us pick one of these or one movie to review. So it'd probably be three reviews because I know we're going to do Scream 2 because it wouldn't make any sense to not.
We've got to do Scream 2 and Scream 3 next week.
Yeah, and then I want to do Inferno as well, too. So we just gave away all the movies we're going to do. But
Yeah, that'll be neat.
That's that.
Yeah. So that is it. Actually, we didn't talk about what we're going to do next week for the actual
segment. This is fucking hilarious, too. We've talked about it before, but nobody really knows, I guess.
Well, hopefully we're going to do it if we can get enough time to get together and do this. And people bitch about it. God damn it. We've had people bitch. When the fuck you all going to review my shit? Yeah. Well, I don't know if I'm going to review every one of them. But we're going to get a pile of these independent movies together, and we're going to have the very first Dead Pit independent horror movie survivor.
That's right. It's just like the real Survivor, except probably a lot harder.
Mm-hmm.
Where we're going to actually attempt to see how long we can sit through independent films. We're going to watch them back to back.
The rules are each movie gets 10 minutes. If they can win us over in that 10 minutes... we'll watch the rest of the fucking movie.
And it has to be by consensus vote, I'm assuming, since there's three of us. We have to agree that we want to continue watching it.
Yeah. And it should just be two votes, because you know Jess ain't going to vote for watch any of them.
That's true.
So, yeah. And some of them are short movies. Hey, if your movie is less than 10 minutes, we'll watch it all. If not, it better be good.
Yeah. So get ready to be gonged. Or donged in this case.
Yeah, we're gonna
the dong show.
We're gonna be coming up with some newer ideas for shows and stuff, and I think that's one that probably will be a hit. People will probably appreciate that. And it won't hopefully it won't be too painful.
Yeah. Oh God, I kinda fucking I worry.
I've got some over here. We'll definitely have a big pile of them for sure. I know you've got some too, so.
Yeah, I've got plenty.
Anyway, that is it for this week, though. We appreciate everybody calling in and writing in. Well, they didn't call in. They wrote in. And Noodles is yelling out there for us.
Aye!
We'll be done in a minute, Noodles. Shut the fuck up. So, until next week, when we do Independent Horror Movie Survivor, I'm the Creepy Kentuckian.
I'm Uncle Bill.
I'm Jess Cole.
Jess Cole's not here, is she?
No,
we stuck her back in there in the kitchen.
She's making sausage patties.
And listen to Dead Pierrot.